okay?
Yeah. What? Oh, it's milk. I make milk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a really terrific movie podcast about movies and voting and dumb awards. I'm one of your hosts, John, and by day, I'm a murderous cyborg zombie, but by night, I invade homes and bond with infants not my own. Who's with me?
Hey, I'm Roy, and all of the cocaine is kicking in, so I'm going to need some bleeding walls, a sexy night nanny named a juror, and about 50 panes of glass.
Hey, I'm Em, and I'm coming to you from the ruined basement of my home here in Toledo, Detroit's sister city, recently taken over by Somni Corp. And I've handed off the kids to the night nurse, and we're ready to go.
Nice. Thank you, Em. Oh, and I forgot to mention, and on the weekends, I am a house. So, okay.
On the weekends, I am blood.
Thank you both. Thank you, Ammon. Thank you, Roy, as always, for being here. Ammon's our special guest this week, and we're talking about three movies that Ammon has never seen, and he decided to do something special by taking recommendations from loved ones.
We assume.
So we're watching the Amityville Horror, which it was your kid, right? Your daughter, who said, let's watch Amityville.
Yeah, my oldest daughter recommended it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
she wanted to torture.
RoboCop, which was recommended by
my brother,
and Tully, which is recommended by your wife.
Yes,
those are all loving people. But do you love any of them less?
I think that my wife and I are still on good terms. The other two, we're gonna have to. No, I'm just kidding. I love them all profoundly, but my brother Enoch knows how much I love gore, so RoboCop was a treat. It's a very peaceful movie.
Oh man.
I love RoboCop. I think there are reasons to like RoboCop in an intellectual way. I think I like RoboCop for those opposite reasons.
So I'm hopeful that RoboCop is actually a prognosticator of what the future will bring in 6 years, to where we will have RoboCops.
Yeah. Is it supposed to be set in 2029?
2028.
Yeah.
Roy, you were struggling with it. It's Robo's Cop.
Robo's Cop, okay.
Is the plural.
No, I enjoyed all of them. We can talk about whether we think they're good movies at the end, but I definitely enjoyed the experience of watching them all. So the family's good. The recommendations were good.
Did you watch Amityville Horror with your daughter?
I was going to, but I watched Tully with Emily. Enoch doesn't live close enough to watch RoboCop, and Elena ultimately wimped out of me on Amityville Horror. So
she's never seen it.
Yeah. But the reason why she wanted me to watch it is we listened to a podcast about the real life happenings that it's based on.
Did the podcast focus on the DeFeo murders or the supposed haunting?
The supposed haunting. So it was entirely about the best selling. Based on real life book that the movie was based on.
Was the book written by Mr. Lutz, or was it just?
No, it was written by a journalist who interviewed the Lutz family, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it an old book or is it like a new book?
So the movie came out in 79. The book came out in 77, and it was apparently huge. It was apparently like everybody's talking point.
Right, right. It must have been huge in book clubs because, I mean, I didn't know this. I think I read that The Amityville Horror was the highest grossing R-rated movie up to that point.
Yeah, I think I read that too.
Which I guess R-rated movies were generally new, but it must have had, you know, the propulsion of a best-selling novel with it.
Yeah, and the idea that it's a true story, right, mm-hmm. is pretty intriguing. So I guess like the house itself, we're now talking about it. The house itself is real and it exists, and this supposed haunted house, but I guess they changed the street name, which I'm not sure how many people who are traveling to go look at the house are going to be deterred, because I hear there's this thing called the internet mm-hmm. where you can figure those things out.
I'm sure, right, everybody's got to know where the Amityville house is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it looks
now
like
I'm feeling
this.
Bad that I didn't Google Street View it, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, so we should probably have Ammon sum it up, and then we can talk.
Yeah.
So I'll sum it up quickly because, and I think that we can do quickly and then talk about it because, to be honest, the details in this, which are the fun parts, don't really cohere, in my opinion, in a lot of narrative order.
Exactly.
Like, it's a lot of stuff happens. But here's the basic premise. So, in 1972,
here's
whatever,
the list of house things mentioned on Zillow.
Lovely four bedroom, recently home to a grisly murder. Somebody named Ronnie Defoe has killed his whole family. I think he's the oldest son, right? Or is he the dad? No, he's the oldest son.
He's the oldest son, which bugs me because the movie makes it super unclear, I guess on purpose, that it makes it look like some random person invaded the home.
Yeah.
And then only later they just kind of in passing say, oh, it's the son, you know? And so, yeah. which I kind of am like, okay, that's kind of a great way to, you know, have tension about what's going on. But also, it's just like a dishonest narration, which bugs me.
Yeah. Well, I think it makes it scarier and creepier that it's the son. I don't know why you don't lead with that.
But sure. Anyway. Right. Because they led with the murders. I mean, they didn't shy away from, you know, you come in knowing that the house has just been home to a grisly murder. In fact, so does the Lutz family that moves into the house. In fact, that's the only reason they can afford the house.
And they keep it a secret that they know. They should have come up with that. They should have said to Mrs. Plute immediately, hey, we know someone was murdered here. So give us $50,000 off or whatever.
Right. It seems like a really bad move to like hide your biggest bargaining chip, right?
Yes.
Especially because it's very clear it's the only reason they can afford the house. And they actually end up keeping some of the furniture, which I love too. They're like, we'll throw in the furniture. And the Lutzes are like, that's great.
Here's a skin couch.
most of the blood is washed out. They probably changed the sheets.
We move in. The other thing that we learn is that I'm going to try to keep what we learned to a minimum because that's not relevant. But George, they're newlyweds, but Kathy has three strapping kids of her own that George is trying to step in as the loving stepfather of. While they're moving in, at least she and maybe both of them are devoutly Catholic. And essentially, right, the next hour and a half is us trying to figure out: is the house really haunted? Is George just a really bad guy? Or is absolutely nothing wrong at all? Any of these three things seem possible. And, you know, we watch spooky, weird things happen, and George gradually goes crazier and crazier until eventually at the end they flee the house. And the credits tell us they and their belongings never came back again. They're safely in another state, which I checked with San Diego. So I think they just wanted to move to San Diego, which I don't blame them.
So when they crack open the gate to hell in the basement and they see the floating head of, is it his own floating head or is it supposed to be Ron DeFeo who looks just like him?
Or the satanic, because there's also a satanic priest who lived there, who I assume also looked just like them. I assume that house like attracts people who look like James Brolin.
So, but I assume like, because multiple people were there, they all saw the floating head, right? But then they kind of like go about, like, well, that was something. And then they go back to living in the house, right?
Well, what's a floating head going to do? Like bite your thigh or whatever? I don't know.
Just put the bricks back. It's okay. Yeah. Oh, man. So, and this movie doesn't make it clear if the haunting is supposed to have come from the grisly murders, because what this movie doesn't really point out, or does it? That Ron DeFeo claimed in court that he murdered his family because an evil spirit told him to. And I think they do mention something about, do they say that this house was built on Indian grounds? Is that up in this?
There's a few possible reasons, right? Maybe it's because of the murder, but they do mention briefly that the house was built on the Native American burial grounds. They say Indian, of course.
Yeah. And Mr. Plute mentioned that.
Yeah, and they mentioned that there's a satanic priest or the one of the witches from the Salem witch trials, which, of course, as we know, caught real witches and didn't just kill innocent people.
Moved to that house.
There's all sorts of possible things that could have made the house haunted.
So it's like, you know, you bring in an exorcist, you bring in like a house hunter, you bring in like the Property Brothers or whoever, and they're like, well. You know, it's my diagnosis, that we can't determine what's wrong with this house because at least four there are at least four haunted elements. Maybe it's a combination of all of those things that combined into a weird pig creature, and that's what it looks like when they're it's just like this weird haunting mutation of stuff. Like they and also that may explain why there's just no, like, the haunting doesn't actually make sense. Because, okay, there are floating heads, the walls bleed, but then also it takes over cars several miles away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it and the house needs money. The house is the house is a thief.
$1,800
They only paid 80. Did they pay 80,000 instead of 120? Was that what they said?
Yeah, I think that's what they said. Which, you know, yes. In this real estate market, yes. I'm like, wow. I would take a
there's
house.
A line she says, oh, $80,000, it may as well be $800,000. Like, oh no. My gosh, an $800,000 house that size, not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Long Island.
Oh man. So as far as like the real history, if we want to mention it briefly, that's all.
I love how much you guys are mentioning of just outside data you collected from outside this movie, because none of that is mentioned in the movie.
It's not. So I didn't really have to do any homework because I don't know, like, especially in junior high, I was into this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Reading the forbidden books in the Fair Library. But, but so.
Is there forbidden books? Was there
I don't know. I think I found.
Was there like a row that like you had to like sneak into or something?
Well, Dewey Decimal System, it's easy because it's like 0.00100 is like the paranormal books, I've noticed. That's the only Dewey Decimal I know.
It should be like 0.666 would be more appropriate. But yeah, I was like reading books on ghosts and hauntings, and I think I brought home a book that had a chapter on the occult, and my father had sat me down and talked to me. And because of that talk, I did end up joining an occult. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it works.
So but like as far as like the real, because like the most people and the current owners have never had a problem with the house, and they've lived there for a long time. But you have the Warrens. You know who the Warrens are? What are their names?
No, who are the Warrens?
Jeff's Warren. I don't know.
No, no, from like The Conjuring. It's a married couple. Okay, you know what I'm talking about? I can't remember their names.
I don't know their names.
Yeah,
but I mean they were real religious paranormal investigators during that time, and Mrs. Warren in a recent interview said that the Amityville house is the most evil house she's ever been in, so there's that. But anyway, there's probably a really good chance that this house isn't haunted and maybe it had too many flies, and I think like if the flies was the extent of the haunting, then I think that'd be fine, right? Especially for $40,000 off, that's not bad. But it turns out there's a floating head in the basement. I think I could live with that too.
Mrs. Warren said it was the most evil house, but aren't people who are really into paranormal stuff, aren't most paranormal people, like legit paranormal people, if you can call them legit paranormal, you know, because, you know, us normies are probably like, well, I don't know about, but people who are really into paranormal stuff, they widely discredit the Warrens, don't they? Aren't they we don't like these people. They're just liars.
Yeah.
They're like Paul. What they're to the paranormal community, what Paul Hogan is to Australia.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You love them unless you're from the place, right? And maybe they're seen as exploitative. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, I think that explains the popularity of the Amityville Horror. I mean, that book, the big best-selling book, it was pretty much... What's another example of that? Like, you know, there are a bunch of, like, big famous 20th century books that were, like, sensations. Like the...
Jaws?
Like the book Papillon, for example.
There was that, the Ask Alice or whatever that everyone's talking about now, which supposedly purports to, like, you know, what is it, some girls, like, experience with satanic abuse or I don't even know, but that was another big one, right? And again, claimed to be real but wasn't.
Right, is that, like, kind of the... contribute like the satanic panic kind of 80s thing.
I
do want to say I desperately want to believe in ghosts and hauntings, and I have not experienced anything of that nature, but I would be much happier living in a world where that's true, knowing that someone is like having their walls bleed would make me sleep better. So
it's kind of, you know, it gives you hope, I suppose, like, because wouldn't you want to be haunted by loved ones? Like, if you had the potential to be haunted, like, maybe it could be loved ones.
Yeah.
So,
but like, what if? But not if they're they when they come back, they have to haunt you in an evil way. So maybe the blood walls is a sign of affection. Maybe the floating head.
The house is just saying hi, right?
It's like, okay, the blood walls are probably from the satanic witch trial priest who's just being like, he's just trying to be like, hey, could you send a message to the Catholic Church for me? I just have a few things I want to say, and, you know, maybe someone can send me some wafers or something. You know, I don't know what he'd want. But it's like just this nice thing. But then the floating pig head is, you know, from all the people who look like James Brolin in the afterlife. That's like he's sending that. But then so the
James Brolin is the pig. Is he Jody?
Yeah, it's like all James Brolins turn into the Dune Navigator eventually, like in the Eternities or something. I don't know.
How good is it that its name is Jody too? Like just like it's this demonic pig, and then it's just like the most 70s, like boring 70s name imaginable.
Yes.
Which I kind of love.
Jody. Okay, Jody. Well, here's the thing that I found interesting. It's, okay, what do we have? I have a bunch of things circled here. Jody wants to live with the daughter, right, forever and ever, and they can play together. And the head of the household sees his own face in an image. There's an axe to the bathroom and a plaid shirt. And, Anyway, it's The Shining. Wait, this movie's The Shining.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. As I was saying,
isn't this before The Shining, though? The Shining
it is,
later?
This came out a year before The Shining. The book, I think, was written like a year before this movie, but obviously this movie's based on a book from before The Shining book.
Which book is older? Is The Shining an 80s book?
The Shining... No, I think The Shining came out in 77. I can look it up, but I mean, it would have been kind of around the same time. If someone wants to look it up, that's fine. But I don't know before or after. I mean, they were all just kind of simultaneous things. But I think it's just so weird that this. Well, I mean, but the plot of this movie is so similar. Like, especially they go to a creepy place that's haunted, and the father goes crazy and takes an axe out, and there's someone possessing the kid. And it's just this weird thing, and it's super creepy and strange for The Shining, and less creepy for this one. And again, this is like one of those things that doesn't make sense.
They keep telling him, like, someone mentions you're starting to look like Ronnie DeFeo, right? But no, he doesn't. His beard's just getting a little longer. It's whatever. But are you disappointed that I guess this had a happy ending? Would you say this had a happy ending? He didn't succumb to becoming Ron DeFeo and shining his family?
What I'm saying is I don't understand, because the reason I don't like this movie is because it's just like, okay, there are flies over here, and this thing gets taken. You know, we didn't talk about the flies. We didn't talk about the statue falling on the priest. And we didn't
very
talk about
far
the weird,
from the location too.
I mean,
the statue is like way far away.
Yeah. And so it's like reaching out. So the thing is, this movie is just random things. Yeah. And it's just a list of stuff. And that's why Ammon couldn't remember the events in the order, because it kind of seems like it doesn't matter. But in The Shining, I feel like it's the exact same thing. The reason it's scary is because it doesn't make sense. And so I can't explain why I feel like it worked with one movie and didn't work with another.
So, Ammon, would you say this is a scary movie?
I'm easily frightened, as we know. I was not frightened by this movie.
Not really a scary movie. It's a moody movie.
So it doesn't know if it wants to be a thriller or a horror movie, and it fails to be both, right? Because it's like, on the one hand, it's like, okay, is Margot or whatever the hell her real name is. Not Margot, that's the name coming up. What the hell is her name? Kathy.
Kathy.
Kathy's trying to figure out, is her husband going to kill her, right? And the kids. Because he kind of is a shitty or a bad husband at the very least, right? Minimally, he's not a great guy.
Good boss either.
Or a good boss. Or or good at anything.
Except sharpening the axe.
So it's like there's this thriller element of like, okay, is her husband going to do something to her? That could have been a good movie. Or like a movie about a really terrifying house could have been a good movie. But instead, this was neither of those. It went vacillated back and forth between them. What exactly the haunting consisted of, like, I don't think we have to have it all explained, but we had no idea at all. It's very vague. And
Well, random. So, but like, as far as the elements of The Haunting, none of them were like crazy frightening. Although I think like the bleeding walls, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like my house is haunted, here's what happens. And people are like, my door's closed. And then you can, you know, stroll on up and say, do your walls bleed? Right.
So demon pig could have been terrifying.
That's true.
The demon pig was not, but it could have been.
So let's talk really, really quickly about 70s horror movies. Because I think a lot of people kind of think of the 80s as like the golden age of horror. Well, you're wrong, because it's the 70s. The 70s has so many great horror movies. And Margot Kidder is actually in a couple. She's in Black Christmas, which she is pretty good in. And then she's in Sisters, which she's really good in. But the 70s has a lot of great horror films. The best of which, Ammon, you've seen with us, which is the good old Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah,
that movie still terrifies me to this day. I love Margot Kidder. Like she's the only thing in this movie that I really liked. But I don't know that I liked her movie, but I just like her a lot.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's weird because I like her in everything that's not Superman. Like I can't stand her Lois Lane. maybe that says more about me than it says about her. But when I see her in other films, I really like her, and she's really good in this movie.
I always like to see priests fighting because it's not what I think of Catholic priests, and I love how Rod Steiger's boss, like Rod Steiger, keeps saying, "Look, I'm telling you, this is demonic possession. The devil is in that house," and then his boss is yelling back, "That's just your secular education talking," which I found a very strange argument.
what a great supporting cast! Even if you just have Rod Steiger and the guy from Jaws, the mayor of Amity. From Jaws is the priest that refuses to believe him. There's some good actors in this film.
Yeah.
What's up with the cop? There's this whole sense that the detective is going to be investigating something, but he never really actually seems to be. It seems like they couldn't decide if they wanted to have a priest cast, like a whodunit type thing going on, or like an exorcist type thing. And so again, they tried to sort of split the difference.
Yeah.
The priests were cool, but I do not get the point of the detective at all in this.
Yeah, he seemed like a detective archetype who's just like asking the right questions, like, "Oh, so, you know, you murdered your wife, huh?" And
well,
and then he's like, "No, I didn't." And then he comes back to it. It turns out, you know, I thought he was going to solve the case, but it turns out he was just a lazy cop who just wanted to waste his day talking to people.
Well, I kept expecting the priest to come back to have like a showdown with the house. And it never happened.
Yeah.
Nope.
I mean,
there is no showdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is no showdown. I kind of wonder if, like, a huge part of this movie is, like, our collective unconscious or just, you know, the populace, the cultural idea and the fun of just the mystery of the Amityville horror. And that's why, like, The Haunting doesn't make any sense because we're not supposed to know, and it leaves it so open. It's like, we don't know what this is, so we just left. And so the horror is just that the Amityville horror is still out in the world, and it wasn't exorcised or wasn't whatever, and we still don't know what it is. But culturally, and I don't know, I mean, I didn't do research on this or anything, but I think this has, like, this weird, a weird byproduct of 40 or 50 years since this happened. You know, it's just not treated as seriously. And, you know, it was just kind of just historically acknowledged as, okay, you know what, all these people just made this up. And that, like, kind of has a weird spiritual effect on how we watch it now. Because if we watched it with kind of the romance of horror out there in the world and some unknown thing, then I think it would have had a different effect, maybe.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do. I totally agree that it is. I think it is more. And I can see why people really. I can see why this movie is a classic, even though I think it was a terrible movie. Because there's a lot going on in it that's fun and interesting. And it hit some sort of zeitgeist moment. It's funny. I read the Roger Ebert review of it when it came out, which was very harsh. But he talks about how he met George. He's like, I interviewed George at an airport in L.A. once, and he seemed like a nice guy. But it's a bad movie. But it's still a bad movie. That was basically the review. But yeah, so clearly, like, it was a big deal, and yeah. I think that must be a big part of it. Have any of you guys seen the remake?
We had this discussion. Is it possible your daughter meant for you to watch the remake?
Yeah.
No, she definitely wanted me to watch this one. She was very clear about that.
Okay, because, yeah, I've never known a 17-year-old who would watch anything before 1984. It is
very rare, but she's an odd bird, but yeah. Oh.
So my teenage daughter, Miriam, like when she was around that age, she was, you know, like, you get to that age and it seems to be more girls than guys, at least in my experience so far with my children, that like they really get into horror and because horror is transgressive and because it shows that you're not afraid, right? And so she was watching some scary movies, but they were tamer, and then she like really wanted to watch something scary. And I made a huge mistake and introduced her to 70s horror, and we watched, you know, the best one. And I don't think she enjoyed it. And actually, as we were watching it, I was like, this is the worst decision I've made as a father for a while.
I couldn't watch that with my kids. I have been watching with the kids Twin Peaks, which is a different kind of horror.
Yeah.
A different kind of but similarly, like, and that's, you know, I actually want to come back when we talk about RoboCop because there's some fun crossover actors in it. But yeah, I mean, like, it's weird to watch it with your kids, which I think is a theme in a lot of them. All the movies have kids showing up in them in some way.
Mm.
It's weird to watch horror with your kids, I think.
I have a 14-year-old who also like was really into horror, but I'd like, okay, here's a horror movie you can handle. And then she'd say, that was stupid. And we watched a few, right? But every time we watch one, she doesn't like it. So I couldn't tell, does she really like horror? And then what did we end up watching? We watched Cabin in the Woods, which she thought was so stupid, but I think is one of the most glorious horror movies of all time. And then we watched, Paranormal Activity, which I think scared the pants off of her. And after that movie was over, she said, I don't like scary movies. So I guess the truth was out.
Talk to her in a couple years. The thing I've noticed about horror is, you know, when I was a fraidy cat as a kid and just terrified
of the lady in white,
of just being exposed to like horrific things. You know, that was one thing. And I was just so afraid. But then, I mean, it's like one of those things, you know, maybe this is a bad thing to say about horror, but it is like where you, as an adult, you go back to the traumas you experienced as a kid, you know? And so maybe this is like an unhealthy thing, but like a weird, you know, abusive relationship that you learn as a child, like that's the kind of thing that you go back to. And so now I'm like really into horror, yeah. Even though like it was, horror was way more horrifying to me as a child as it was to other children. But now I'm a big fan.
Yeah. I'm starting to come, as you guys know, I'm easily terrified, but I'm starting to come there too. And I think in part it's because you can do you can do a lot of interesting things in horror. I mean, Jordan Peele is definitely one of the most interesting. I've not seen Nope yet.
I was going to ask, yeah.
Us and Get Out are two of my favorite movies of the last. You know,
I still haven't
years.
Seen Us. I keep oh, it's on my list.
Roy, I think I love Us. I thought Get Out was pretty good, but Us was, I think, really where it's at. And Ammon, I need to ask you about this. I'm going to be as vague as possible because I feel like Jordan Peele did this. Some kind of like literary device, like, I don't know, something we probably learned in English class. And I'm wondering if he actually made something up where, because Us does this thing where there's a protagonist and we relate to this protagonist and there's a, like a protagonist and antagonist. And then there's something that we do where, okay, so, one certain protagonist like represents something universal, and then another protagonist represents something kind of individual, and then there's kind of a switcheroo that I've never seen.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So is that
vague enough that it doesn't get anyway?
Let's re-edit this part after I've watched the movie. We'll come back. So,
but no, I'll think about if there's a term for that. But it does happen. I mean. The other thing, like, this is not exactly the same, but a friend of me pointed out once that the TV series Breaking Bad, another great horror series, there's a similar thing there where it's not exactly the same, but I think what you're speaking about, John, where at a certain point you realize that Hank, the FBI agent, his brother, his later kind of goofy brother-in-law, is the hero, and we've been watching the villain the whole time.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you think he's an anti-hero, but he's not an anti-hero. He's a straight-up villain.
Well,
and
I think the term anti-hero is thrown around way too much.
Yeah.
I think when he lets Jessica Jones die, I think that's when I realize, oh.
He's not a good guy.
He's not a good guy.
Like, she can't save New York now.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing about Breaking Bad is – I guess that's the judge of your character. Like, when do you stop rooting for him, or when do you realize, you know, you have to realign the protagonist antagonist relationship in your own head? Because it's kind of funny how many people all the way to the very end considered him a protagonist, like in their minds, you know, to the point.
Yeah,
where,
that is interesting.
You know, to the point where they would write hate mail to his wife, saying you're getting in the way of
to be fair, she does suck.
Yeah, of what's his of you know the what's what did he say his name was? Yeah, of you know Walter White's drug empire. What's wrong
with
you?
You're getting in the way of that. So bringing it back to this movie, I would say the surprise protagonist is the house that wins, or you could say the next buyer who definitely bought the house for $60,000 probably won,
and got free furniture.
They're just stacks and stacks of furniture in the house.
So I wonder,
dates back to Salem.
I wonder if it's weird for the owners. They've probably put up like a gate to their driveway or something to protect their privacy. But so when I was in Germany a couple years ago, we used the internet and we found the Hills Are Alive hill. And it was full on some guy's farm. It was private property. And I mean, no one came out and yelled at us. But I wonder if like once or twice a week, he's got to like shake his fist at, you know, the visitors who come to gawk at the Maria Hill. And so it's probably pretty crappy to live in like a historically significant house like the Amityville Horror House.
Yeah, that'd be a fun question. This is the fans.
Yeah.
All right, so we move on to RoboCop.
Good call. Yeah, we talked about Amityville longer than I thought we would, but it was a great condo. Yeah.
So, well, I think we can do RoboCop pretty fast. Not because it's not an incredible film. Okay, so Detroit sucks. There's lots of crime. There's a corporation that plans on building a new city on top of Detroit. Like, they're just going to plop it down, I think, right?
And this corporation owns the police force.
Yes. And the city. I think the city's called New City or Better Delta Detroit. City. Or maybe they're just going to call it Lansing. I don't know. But so anyway, but to achieve their goals, first they have to wipe out crime, I guess. So you have Murphy, who's come to Detroit. He's come from another place. And anyway, he's moved in on his very first assignment. He goes out and he finds the worst bad guy ever. And the two of them, not waiting for backup, chase 20 bad guys into an industrial steel mill. And surprise, because numbers matter. They don't do so well. His lady gets distracted by the Alabama black snake, and what's his head? I guess Murphy. So I had nightmares about this as a kid, by the way, and I kind of remember them shooting off all of his limbs. And I'm thankful that's not the case. They shoot off his hand, and then they just shoot him lots. And his bulletproof vest doesn't do very good. I'm taking
that scene is just. It's really gross, you know. It's got to be. It's so weird because I remember when RoboCop came out, and I remember seeing the commercials and my older brothers making fun of it, like RoboCop. What kind of weird throwback is this? Because it's just so goofy and strange. It's like, look, I'm a robot cop, and I imagine all those people who are like, hey, let's see this fun-loving robot cop movie, and have this be the opening scene, and then just throw up in the aisles.
Yeah, because you don't realize that this is the same director who did Flesh and Blood, right?
Yes,
we're gonna have to talk about his career at some point in this conversation. Yeah, go on.
No, so this is the Detroit cop version of Flesh and Blood. Anyway, they're able to save, I guess, his torso and one of his arms, but they decide to lop off that arm anyway because I don't know. Who needs the arm? Anyway, he's now a RoboCop, and they wiped his memory, but they did a really poor job. We'll get back to that. He is turned on, and he goes about his assignments, and he's cleaning up the town. The first guy, he doesn't really arrest him, right? He just kind of throws him into the soda cooler in the convenience store, and then he leaves, right? You're welcome.
That's the best. You're welcome.
Yeah.
He destroys the convenience store and leaves a body there.
Anyway, he's been a cop for one day. I think it's one day because he's having his night's rest, even though wasn't the objective 24/7? And I forgot to mention, the only reason RoboCop came online was because Ed 209 doesn't, I guess his cameras don't work, right? So testing out Ed 209 in the boardroom, he blows away the guy who's helping out with the demonstration. That's a great scene. And so paving the way for RoboCop is the terrible failure of Ed 209. RoboCop then, while he's sleeping, remembers being killed, and he has flashbacks of his family. And so now he's on the hunt to figure out who he was. His partner recognizes him through the mouth slit of the RoboCop helmet. I want to say she remembers him twirling the gun like TJ Laser, right?
That's the claim.
Yeah.
She remembers him twirling the gun. She recognizes his son chin. Or something.
She recognizes his chin, right? Yeah. Also, if I'm a bad guy, I'm aiming for the chin.
That's there's a lot of Christ imagery in this movie, and the biggest miracle in this movie is that out of the 300,000 rounds shelled out at RoboCop, no one manages to hit RoboCop's chin.
So what you need to know, I guess, is the guy who had Ed 209, he's pissed off. So he kills the RoboCop guy, and he wants to, you know, rule Crystal City or whatever.
The RoboCop executive.
Yeah, he's the RoboCop, yeah. And so he kind of hires the main bad guy. What's his name?
Boddicker. Boddicker.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Red from that 70s show.
Yes.
So Boddicker survives crashing through at least 57 panes of glass in this film. And there's the warehouse where they make panes of glass, because it's like you turn to the right and there's one, and then to the left, and they're all over the place. And then they replace them. But they probably get broken later. So RoboCop, knowing who he is, he goes to confront this guy, but you can't because of his three directives, which it's not really clear to me if, like, he's unable or able to violate them, because it seems like he was about to violate one, and then the guy's like, you can't do that, you have a directive. He's like, oh, that's right. So I guess if you remind him of his directives, then he can't.
Because he's not like he's not already killed a bunch of people.
Yeah,
right.
There's been some
he's
killing.
Killed a bunch of people already.
Yeah, he's not really an arrest first kind of guy, right? So
there's no directive that doesn't say you can't just kill anyone who's not an OCP employee.
Yeah. So
because like, he does that.
Yeah. So he tries to kill the main villain. What's the character's name?
Dick Jones.
Dick Jones. Is that the actor? Or is that the character?
Character.
That's a character, Dick Jones. That's subtle. But he can't because he has a fourth directive, a classified directive that won't let him arrest or kill people who are in this company. And so Ed 209 is unleashed on him, and he almost kills RoboCop, but he's foiled by stairs. there you go.
Robots can't do stairs. This is a RoboCop thing.
Goes back to the steel mill where he was massacred to heal up. But Bodenkirk or whatever the guy's name is, he's given these giant elephant rifles. I get they're like tank turrets, but it's a rifle. And they're sent to go kill RoboCop. And when they get there, they miss him so many times. And RoboCop is not fast. He is not a fast-moving target, but they can't hit him. And he ends up killing all the bad guys. RoboCop does. He turns one guy into oatmeal in the what do you call it? The
toxic
waste. Yeah, he was either going to become a supervillain or he was going to melt. He melted, and then he exploded.
I have to say, this was so great watching with Katie, because we were watching it, and this guy gets mutated in the toxic waste, and Katie said, oh, wow, he's like totally mutated. Are they saving him for the sequel? Is he going to be the bad guy of RoboCop 2? You know, I'm like, and I had just enough time to say, yeah, I can't believe you called it. He's totally the bad guy. Oh, no, he's not, because that's right when the car hit him and he exploded.
Anyway, he goes back to the corporate boardroom of OCP where they're all hanging out, and he goes to arrest that guy. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, there's kind of a showdown between him and Bodenkirk, and Bodenkirk stabs him in the shoulder, because if you're going to kill someone, aim for the shoulder.
RoboCop, however, survives the shoulder injury and uses his data access pick or spear. I don't know what you want to call that, but he...
It's like a Freddy Krueger glove, kind of.
Yeah, basically.
It's like a Wolverine thing. Yeah.
He stabs him right in the neck, and, yeah. and you know, well, that takes care of that. He goes back to the OCP. This is taking me way longer than I thought. Oh, he goes back to the OCP headquarters, and he can't do anything against Dick Jones until... the old man, that's the name of the character, played by Dan O'Herlihy. He says, Dick, you're fired. And then, of course, RoboCop can shoot him through a pane of glass.
Yep. And then he's like, oh, you know, we could use you on the force. What's your name, son? And he goes,
Murphy.
Murphy.
Murphy. Yeah.
Apparently, Paul Verhoeven.
He's joined freely.
Paul Verhoeven, when he first watched this with a public audience, he knew... He had a hit on his hand when the whole audience yelled, Murphy, before Murphy said Murphy.
Oh, man. I haven't seen this movie in over 30 years, and this movie was such a delight to watch.
Did it live up to your memories?
Yeah, and actually, fortunately, it was a little bit below my memories as far as how brutal and gruesome it was. Or maybe I'm just more numb than I was as a 7-year-old.
He's not at 7.
Or whatever age, you know, my parents didn't even understand what R meant. When
if you saw the commercial for RoboCop, like any parent would be like, yeah, that's probably an okay movie to show my kid.
What's an all cop?
Oh, man.
Okay, really quick before I go into things, Ammon, I just got to know, is this what you thought it would be, or were there any surprises?
I know Verhoeven well enough to know. And I know it's like I knew enough about RoboCop. This was pretty much exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Okay, because you heard the discourse on RoboCop, how it's actually about like corporations taking over and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. This movie is a tidy hour and 40 minutes, which I loved. Like that, this movie moves. There's no wasted time. They don't spend an hour until he becomes RoboCop. It happens like in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
No, so here's a question I've got for you guys: Is he set up to get massacred by Omnicorp so that they can turn him into RoboCop?
That's not the impression I'm under. I know they're waiting for the next cop to die, but I'm also under the impression that like it happens so frequently that they're just ready.
According to trivia, and I never really connected with this, but and it makes sense. Like that was one of the reasons he was transferred, because he was a really good cop in a really nice part of town, and he was transferred to that part of town because they were hoping to get good RoboCop applicants killed. And so that was the reason for the transfer. Yeah. I do want to mention, I mentioned something about the Christ imagery, which, you know, if you read stuff about, you know, about RoboCop, they'll say, Paul Verhoeven wanted this to be like an American Christ allegory. So you have stuff like how he's shot in the hand, which is like nails, and shot in the head, which is like a crown of thorns. At one point, he's walking across water at the end, and you know, in that same scene, he's stabbed with a spear, and you know, so and you know, he's in like cross formation and stuff like that, and so it's like, oh, interesting, Christ imagery. Christ imagery
and
is always interesting.
We all know that Judas would snort cocaine off of the boobs of hookers.
Right.
I think that's actually Thomas. I think Judas is, Judas is
Dick Jones.
Who's the main bad guy? Yeah, Dick Jones. Okay. Yeah.
He becomes Party Thomas rather than Doubting Thomas. Okay, so I just think it's funny because everyone says it's so interesting. I mean, I kind of don't think it's interesting so much, but I kind of like the idea of Paul Verhoeven saying, okay, just really, really sarcastically saying, like, this is a really sarcastic Christ imagery where America's savior is a armored zombie that just shoots random people. And that's like what America's savior is.
I think that's exactly right. Right. I mean, like, because, yeah, I mean, it's like the whole, I mean, this one, unlike Amityville, like, I didn't love RoboCop either. I'll be honest, but I understand why. And I actually think it's a really good movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think it does what it wants to do really well, and Verhoeven is really clever, right? I love the commercials, which are a lot of fun.
Did you notice the Nukem commercial?
Oh yeah.
I want to play that so bad.
I would love the game, but like Ammon, you probably remember, you know, listening to X96 growing up, and that was Todd Nukem's when he comes on air.
Yeah,
he would play.
He and Chet Tapp were my favorites.
Yeah.
They had the best taste.
Chet Tapp's still on the radio over here, by the way.
He's got to be like 80. What's he still? Is he still like, now that 480 isn't a label, what does he play? Like, he can't do his Mortal Coil songs anymore.
I think he mentions it sometimes, but yeah. I think Newcomb is too. Okay, so the thing is, okay, let me just get to, Ammon, you didn't like the movie so much. I think I really like the movie. And I want to say, you know, I like it because it's an indictment of the corporate capitalism culture and, you know, putting money over human value. And again, the nation's savior is sarcastically, you know, just someone, you know, a guy with a gun is supposed to save us all. And just more, you know, the only way to stop violence is more violence. And I love all that commentary. Mm-hmm. But I love the movie because it's about a mindless zombie cop that shoots everyone.
Oh,
even
man.
Though that's what it's sarcastically about. Like, that's the weird thing about Verhoeven is I kind of feel like he's – like it's like 30% his message and then 70% is the – you know, of what he communicates to us is what he's trying to communicate against. But it's just so – fun and brutal and crazy that, you know, it's not surprising that, you know, frat boys and, you know, would get into this, which is kind of how I am. It's like, I love the things that I think he's warning
John's
me
a frat
against.
Boy. Yeah. I love this movie unironically, right? It's just, this movie is such a perfect 80s film, right? Mm-hmm. It's just all about excess. And I kind of love the idea, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, but the idea that you have this thing called RoboCop and then you turn it on. But once you turn it on, like it's no longer within anyone's control, right? RoboCop is going to do what RoboCop wants to do. And there's no stopping him. And like when he gets to the hostage negotiating place, right? And he's like, I'm going in. I'm like, what? Right. So, I mean, there's like, you can't possibly predict what RoboCop is going to do. And it's probably, like an army of RoboCops would be a complete disaster. Right, it would be.
Yeah, he has to be an army of one, which is no. I mean, and I think it's funny because when I said that, I think it's a really good movie, but I don't like it. You guys are exactly describing why. Because right? I think that it's very smart. I think it's very clever. I think there's a lot going on in it, but I just don't like the things that you guys unironically like. I really don't like. Right,
so right, like, right.
So
humble brag, you're a better person than we are. That's fine. That's
not I've got my own vices.
Well, here's a legit critique of, you know, like how we're evaluating this is it doesn't help. I think that the people RoboCop is killing are also the most sadistic, twisted, unrealistic criminals that have ever existed ever, you know? And so I think the point may have gotten across a little bit better if we saw the see the collateral damage lives of RoboCop. We don't see someone like a desperate criminal or, a stray bullet, you know, like the shopkeepers dying or whatever. Yeah. They just get their shop destroyed, I guess. So we kind of get it, but we don't really get
You don't see the junkie who needs help and RoboCop still just kicks the shit out of him.
Like, yes. Sir, put down the drugs. You are committing a crime.
Yeah, and it just lays waste to this person who really just needs, you know, housing and healthcare, right?
I will throw you to a drug facility. Yeah.
Yeah, through the glass window. But I think it's better than Ed 209, though, because I think Ed 209, like, even when you do put down the syringe, he's just going to, you know, he's going to turn you into spaghetti anyway. But
I love Ed 209.
Yeah.
I love the decision that it's not just a robot, but it's like some kind of psycho newborn animal thing. Like it like has these strange, just barely born emotions, like a cornered stray puppy or something. Yeah. Like when it flies upside down on the stairs and it's like doing the pig squeal, like you kind of feel strangely bad for Ed 209.
Like, come on, someone turn it back over. So like this movie like is in danger of being like a cop worship or violence worshiping, right? And mm-hmm. and we definitely have that problem. I wouldn't say just in this country, but this country has like a I don't know how to put it. Like it's not for, cause it's not just for cops, but also it extends to the military, right? And if you're a cop, you're a hero. If you're in the military, you're a hero. Well, I know a lot of people in the military who are not heroes. And I have to assume that, like, cops are a cross section of our population, maybe slightly skewed, maybe not slightly skewed. But, you know, just because you wear a badge, you wear a uniform, doesn't make you a good person. And I wish we could just acknowledge that instead of saying, how dare you, like, say anything bad about the police, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know.
I mean, this is, yeah, I'll keep my politics to myself for a bit on that. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, and I think it's interesting that Verhoeven is Dutch, right?
Yeah. So
this is somebody who's coming in, and I think this shows up in a lot of his movies. You know, he's coming in as an outsider, right? And so that sort of, I think, sharpens, like, what makes this so American is, you know, he's taking all these tropes, but just, like, through a slightly distant lens, and so you see them magnified in really grotesque ways. But yeah, it's easy for that magnification to just become glorification. Such a really fine line.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So I do live near Detroit now. I was actually up there a couple weeks ago to see David Lynch, to see what did I see? I've already pointed out Lost Highway in the theaters, which, boy,
oh,
creepy movie. Seeing that on the big screen was terrifying.
Yeah, I saw it at Groovies once. It was really, that was a traumatic night.
Yeah, that's a hard movie. But anyway, so I was, you know, I go up there sometimes. And, you know, I would argue that Quicken Loans, what's his name, the guy who runs Quicken Loans, Dan Gilbert, is Omnicorp, right? They have taken over. So Detroit is supposedly going through a renaissance right now, but it's going through a renaissance in part because Quicken Loans, it owns more and more of the town, and arguably the Detroit police take a lot of their cues from what helps Detroit area, you know, what helps the Renaissance. So we can help the citizens who have lived here for a long time, or we can help people improve property values. So it's weird to watch this movie 40 years later when, yeah, it's this dystopic comedy, but it's not exactly not true, right?
Yeah.
And
so
drones are in our future.
Yeah.
And I actually worry that we wouldn't actually have a problem with Ed 29. We'd be like, ah, he kills a couple people.
Yeah.
Like, how much damage can Ed 209 do? Because it's only one thing shooting one person at a time. But, you know, the corporations, they affect the whole population.
Most people can get away while he's shooting the one person. So is Detroit then becoming like Portland, where instead of, like, fixing the town for the people who live there, they're just pricing out the poor people? Or, like, Baltimore was doing that?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit is so huge, and you know, it used to be one of the biggest cities in America, and it's lost 2/3 of its population. So it's becoming that in areas. So if you go to, like, downtown or midtown or Ferndale, that's what it's like. You go to most of Detroit, and it's still incredibly poor. Services don't work on a regular basis. But yeah, there are pockets that are gentrifying very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah,
there. I think Katie was talking to me about this. Like, there are parts of Detroit where they pretty much, like, if you want a house, like, they could, you could just take a house. Like, you can.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, you can just get a house, and you can get a really great deal on it. But, like, all the houses around you are, condemned, there are squatters in the homes, and, you know, it's just like, okay.
So I heard a wonderful story that in some sections of Detroit, the mailmen can no longer deliver mail because there's packs of feral dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And I want that to be true so bad.
I think that probably is true. I mean, there are, and, you know, because part of it is there's areas where the buildings have crumbled, right? And so you've got big fields in the middle of what used to be one of the biggest cities in America. So, yeah, it's, and that was already starting in the 80s, but it's accelerated, you know, a lot. So, yeah, I mean, that's our future. And then drones, too, right? Which can I ask you, okay, so Ed 209 versus RoboCop. So we're told in this sort of hand-waving way that the reason why they need a RoboCop is they need some sort of brain to be helping guide the robot. Is that right?
Well, they said, like, so he comes with years of experience as a policeman, so.
Ah, okay.
I mean, does, I guess?
But how, though? Because his whole brain, I don't think much of his brain lasts.
Yeah, he only has like half a head. Like, the front half of his head is there.
It's like, well, was it the right side of his brain that was blown away? So that was like his artistic side is gone. But his his business brain is still, like, he still retained all this muscle memory of twirling guns and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess that must be what it is.
Well, okay, I do want to talk just a little bit about it's kind of interesting. You know, this is kind of far-reaching, but kind of a cool idea. And I read that they came upon this in the script later. It wasn't they had like this late script evaluation realization that, hey, Clarence Boddicker and his gang could be on the employ of Dick Jones, which is kind of an interesting concept because Dick Jones, his whole thing, Ed 209 is his legacy, and he wants to make sure it happens. He wants to make sure crime happens so that his product could be marketed and sold to the military. So crime has to happen for the product to be advertised, pretty much.
So he's like doing Munchausen syndrome, but for the city's crime?
Right, right. So I think it's kind of interesting. This is the whole idea. It's like, okay, this corporation will come and save us, but in order for the corporation to exist and to have profits, it also needs to maintain the crime in the city.
This is interesting, yeah. And I will also try to not get political, but the war on drugs that started in the Reagan era, like crime and drug use was declining when the war on drugs began, right? But they needed a war on drugs to exist to pay for, you know, the huge influx of money that went into the police system. Anyway, it sounds similar, right? They needed a problem, so they created – there was, you know, a problem was manufactured so they could then deal with it.
I'm going to give a shout-out here. So this is going to be one moment as a philosophy professor, and I'm going to say if you're interested in this idea, Michel Foucault and Judith Butler are the people to go to on this because there's a very rich literature on that question. And yeah, I mean, you guys are describing my actual use of cops at this point, not in RoboCop, but in the real world. So, yeah, I mean, and I think, and again, I think Verhoeven is probably doing that intentionally, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all intentional. And I mean, if you want to send us a link to that, we can just put it in
the I'll send you, yeah, I'll send some links in there.
Yeah, or sure. How to spell those words you said.
Yeah. If you want to send some of those Frenchy links you just mentioned.
Oh, no, I would love to have been in the pitch meeting for RoboCop, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I assume that
this is pre-Total Recall, right?
Yeah, we saw that pitch meeting in the movie when he was snorting the coke with
he's Miguel Ferrer.
Yeah, they just filmed it, like, we'll put this in the film.
He did Die Hard, not Die Hard, he did Total Recall also, right?
Yes, Verhoeven did Total Recall, which is also a movie. We are slowly going through all of Verhoeven's, like, American films from the beginning, because we watched
Flesh
Plus
Blood.
I can't
wait until you guys do Showgirls.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to Showgirls. That's on its way. But
Starship Trooper.
Yeah, oh, I love Starship Troopers. But Ammon, have you ever seen Flesh Plus Blood or Flesh and Blood? We call it Flesh Plus Blood.
Oh my goodness.
It's a movie. It's funny. It's kind of – we reacted to it the same way you reacted to RoboCop a little bit. Like, we found stuff to respect, but it's got the Verhoeven grotesqueness about it. Like, it was just – it was so much grosser and disturbing and offensive than we thought it would be. We thought it would just be this kind of medieval fantasy with, you know, maybe, you know, like heads falling off or something.
Maybe only one, like sort of bad rape scene instead of like the multiple really
of a lot.
Really
right,
bad
right.
ones.
Yeah. There were a lot. I kind of think, Roy, if you remember right, I kind of think we had a pretty interesting conversation about it. About
who did we watch it with? Was it just us two? Or did my brother Josh end up watching that one?
I think Zoe was with us when we did.
Oh, it's probably
when we did that movie. But it's just like one of those things. Like Verhoeven, I kind of respect him. I kind of don't because I hear he's like one of those guys who yells on set. Which, by the way, I think my legacy. I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm fascinated by Hollywood stories of who's nice and who's mean in Hollywood. Like I'm fascinated by that. Like, are they nice on the set? Like I'm fascinated. I want to compile a database. To figure out who is the nicest person in Hollywood and who is the meanest person in Hollywood, you know, with examples and stuff like that. Apparently Verhoeven is a mean guy, and so I don't respect him for that reason, but I kind of respect him for kind of making movies that sort of make me think, but most more often than not kind of do the opposite of what he's trying to get me to do. Ammon, you said what's your Verhoeven experience? I mean, you've seen...
So I've seen Starship Troopers. I've seen this. Mm-hmm. I've seen Die Hard, Total Recall. I don't know if I've seen Die Hard.
Yeah.
And I know he just had one come out, which is ostensibly about poker, but is really about people torturing in Iraq, which sounds, you know, par for the course for him. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it sort of like I was saying with Amityville Horror, like this is like the discourse. Like I knew the discourse of this, even though I've not seen the movie, and that's what I feel about with a lot of Verhoeven. You know, he's a very distinctive director, for better or worse.
He's better at creating discourse than making good movies.
I mean, a lot of people love him. I really did not like. And again, like I know Starship Troopers is supposed to be satirical, but I can really understand why it got just picked up by fascists as a movie that they actually just liked.
Yeah, I don't love Starship Troopers.
You know, yeah. I don't know. Maybe Verhoeven is like the worst artist that ever has existed. Right? Because, I mean, it's like, I mean, you have to be incredibly bad at something for, you know, to have a message in mind, apparently. And, you know, I don't exactly know what he has in mind for sure. I mean, we have these theories about what people mean by certain things. But like with Verhoeven, you have to lift up so much artifice. Like it's when 90% of the movie is artifice, then how could you blame someone for interpreting the artifice as the message? And so it's maybe you're really bad at what you do, man.
That's a good question. But it was fun. I had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, man.
All right. Okay. You guys ready for Tully?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tully. And this is interesting. I was so excited when Tully was picked because we never get to talk about movies like this. And it's really fascinating. It's fascinating for me because it's completely about motherhood. And, you know, and so this is more of an alien movie to me than Starship Troopers is in a lot of ways, right? So
the three of us are all mothers, so.
Yeah. Charlize Theron is a girl named Margot, and she's married to Office Marlo. Space.
Marlo.
What'd I say?
Margot Kidder.
I thought I said Marlo.
Yeah, it's hard.
Sorry, buddy.
I kept getting Margot Kidder and Marlo confused, too. It's too close.
Sorry, John.
Her name is Marbo. And she is pregnant with her third child, and one of her kids is not autistic. They kind of make a point of saying, and actually, I don't know, I think I see reasons for this. They make a point of saying he's not autistic because I think they didn't want to deal with, like, obviously not dealing properly with an autistic kid. They actually say, you know, we don't know what's wrong with him. Like, he's not diagnosed. It's something else.
It makes it more of a difficult challenge for her to have an undiagnosed child, right?
Right.
As opposed to you got autism, which is tough.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you know, you can start orienting yourself.
There are resources for that kind of thing. Yeah. There are no resources for Jonah.
Apparently. Not at like the super rich school that should have resources like spilling out of the closet.
You can bring the resources for yourself, yeah.
Holy cow. He's going to need a one-on-one aid, which you will need to provide. And
That's really annoying. It's like, okay, yeah, our rich school has all these standards because we only allow kids that like do all the work themselves. Like we don't do any work. Like that's their thing. Like we don't do any work as a school.
Oh, it just drives me crazy. Like, we love your son. He's not a good fit. We love him. He's not a good fit.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
All right. So.
So I have visceral reactions to parts of this movie, but
really?
I'll. Try.
Oh, I'm sure you do. This movie was a vacation for me. I'm like, oh, so that's what it's like to have children.
So and the one person says,
this is like visiting a zoo for me. Yeah.
It's her weird sister-in-law, right? Who's like, the third child's the easiest, and I thought that was
loaded.
The opposite, right? Like the third is the hardest because you no longer have you don't have three arms, right? You don't have three hands.
I have to say that having twins is the hardest.
Yeah. Oh, man, I imagine.
I'm sure, yeah.
But, yeah, for exactly the reason Roy points out, though, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, John.
Oh, no problem. He said this great thing about having a third child, which I always thought was funny, even though I never had a third child. He says, a lot of people say having a third child is difficult. Let me just tell you what it's like. Imagine you're drowning, and then someone hands you a baby. Margot has a baby. It's a cute baby, and her brother, who's like the annoying brother, right? Who's like, you know, the husband of the woman who says, "Oh, the third baby is the easiest, and I barely had time to make it to the gym." Yeah, that
guy.
Creep?
Have you seen the movie Creep on Netflix?
I haven't seen Creep, but I have had a conversation with Mark Duplass in real life because I saw your sister's sister, and he was at Sundance, and I talked to him afterward, and his driver made a point of interrupting our conversation, I think to show power over me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so his story.
He stars in the movie Creep, which is a horror film that is – it's like a found footage horror film. And he's really good in that, I guess, in the way that he – it's – anyway, sorry.
I hear he's creep-like in that.
He's very creep-like.
Yeah. Okay, here's the concept. A night nanny, which I don't know if this is a real concept in real life, but it's a concept in this
movie. Oh, it totally exists. Yeah.
Oh, it does exist.
Oh, okay. I was going to Google it, but okay.
Seems like a not that bad of an idea. There's this weird intimacy issue.
No, it's a great idea if you can afford it.
So, Ammon, do you have a night nanny?
I said if you can afford it.
Oh. So he's like, okay, get a night nanny. What they do is they stay up at night, and, you know, if you need to breastfeed, they just gently wake you up, and they stick the kid on you. And that's what they do. And then they watch over everything, and then you can get all the sleep because, you know, young mothers, apparently, this is news to me, apparently they don't sleep very well. So,
I've heard.
Can I ask you, Ammon, if you had this same experience with children that, like, a couple weeks into our first child where, like, for a while, the baby crying would wake me up every night. But after a couple weeks, it stopped waking me up.
Yeah, I had that. So again, this is where twins is different, right? Because okay. Yeah, so all my children were breastfed, which obviously I can't help with, right?
Yeah.
Which meant that I woke up once in the night because that's the main reason why they're waking up. Yeah. We'll wait when once the OmniCorp develops the nursing cop, then we'll talk. But with twins, you know, that was a different beast. But yeah.
So that was a thing for me, and I was always like, well, I'm sleeping just fine, right? And I was kind of unintentionally probably a jerk about it. I'm surprised my wife,
weren't you?
Yeah, my wife didn't. I'm surprised she wasn't like stabbing me in the middle of the night or
yeah. No, I think I've got a fair bit of Drew in me also, right?
I really want to talk about that because I super relate to Drew in this film, but John, I'll let you finish summing up the film.
Yeah, I relate to Drew too. I play a lot of video games. So, okay, they're convinced of it. Let's get the night nanny. Let's do it. So they call her up. Night nanny shows up. She's like, hi, I'm Tully.
Tully.
That's the name of the movie. Yeah. And she's really sweet and really nice. And that first night, she takes care of everything. And they're like, okay, that went pretty well. And she actually, like, cleans their house and everything. And like, wow, we really getting our money's worth. But also, you know, the brother is paying for the night nanny. So they didn't even know how much they're paying or whatever. and so pretty much most of the rest of the movie is, you know, the relationship that they have with Tully. And Tully taking care of the kid, and then Margo and Tully kind of have, you know, conversations, you know, because they have, you know, this kind of generation gap, and, you know, they kind of help each other out and support each other. Okay. It's a really great
movie. And that's the end of the movie.
That's the end of the movie. I hardly ever do this, you guys. Okay, listeners out there, I'm just going to say this really quick. I never do this, but if you've never seen Tully, it's on Netflix. Stop listening to us right now. Everyone has Netflix. Go ahead and watch Tully right now. Because, you know, I'm just going to talk about just the rest of the movie really quick. And, you know, you might want to watch it before you listen to this. I never do this, but go ahead. Do it. Stop us right now. Watch Tully. Okay, you're back.
Tully is a cyborg.
Welcome back to
Robo-Tully Cop.
It's Robo-Tully. Yes, exactly. So anyway, Tully and Margo decide to go out and
well, so can I, like, Tully starts getting a little invasive, right?
Well,
yeah, you start to wonder something creepy is going to happen.
She becomes really familiar, and before they go out on their date, there's the diner girl sex scene, right?
That which does like, happen first.
At that point, I'm like, this is definitely going to be a horror film. There's no way this isn't going to turn into a horror film.
So that was a really freaky part where Tully dresses up in this diner outfit that Drew has fantasies about. And
By the way, if if you check your husband's browser history and that's the worst thing that comes up is their fetish guy. Is like diner waitresses, then you're doing pretty good. So
no, that's perfect. So anyway, Tully and Margo go up to Drew and they pretty much kind of have this sort of threesome where it's not really, but it's like Tully gets up on top of Margo's husband.
Marlo does the coaching.
Yes, and then Marlo does the coaching. Yeah. And so I said Margo was a joke, and now I can't keep it straight.
Yeah, I know.
So can I also, because there is the moment at the beginning with Roy McKissing about it being a horror movie where she says to her brother, I'm not going to hire a night nanny. Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens in horror movies, and then the main character ends up with a cane.
Yes. Oh,
yeah, right? And then they very intentionally play a song that the characters can listen to, but it's just part of the score, right? Where the lyrics talk about strangers in danger.
Yeah.
Mm. So,
and that's one possibility of where it's going. But yeah, sorry, right, go on, John. Right.
So, yeah, actually, let me just ask you guys this. Did you think it was going to be like a Hand That Rocks the Cradle situation where Tully takes away Drew?
I didn't, no, but I thought that they might have fallen in love with each other. That was one direction it was going also.
Right, because we kind of established that Marlo has
there's had, a lot of like, touching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like she had like, you know, like girl relationships in the past and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
But it definitely seemed like it was not going to be a good situation for the family.
No, it seemed like it was going to be a bad ending, and the genre was going to rapidly change, right? Kind of like Atlantics that rapidly turned into a horror film. But I had to double check IMDb multiple times. Like, did I miss that this is a horror film? And I think one of the it's like comedy, drama, and mystery.
Mystery.
And so I'm like, okay. Well, there is going to be some sort of weird twist here, but I guess it's not a scary one.
I'm so glad you didn't do so much research, Roy, because I was like, Ammon, last week, you know, last podcast when you said we're watching Tully, I was like, oh, Tully, because I had seen Tully before. And I was like, oh, I hope these guys don't find out like what it's really about, because
yeah. And I read nothing about it for that reason. Yeah.
And so that's a beautiful thing. And that's like the wonderful thing, you know, about, I mean, movies with a twist, you know, you watch an M. Night Shyamalan movie and you're expecting it. It works so great in non-genre movies like this.
Yeah.
That there is something else weird going on. Okay. Let me just jump to it. Tully and Marlo get in a car crash, and then Marlo wakes up in the hospital, and Drew says, you know, filling out the forms, he says, oh, her maiden name is Tully. So we instantly realize that, okay, Marlo has invented, like, she did a Fight Club with herself, and she is Tully at night, and she's Marlo in the day, and she just called on the strength of her youth to get through this like baby time. And I think it's just so great watching the movie a second time, because you have stuff like when Marlo asks, does Drew ever ask about me? It's not like a weird thing. Like,
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. It's like, does Drew like know who I am? You know, does he know where I came from? Does he, So
did we only date for 4 weeks before we got engaged?
Right, right. You know, it's like, you know, does he know the fun side of myself or the young side of myself, or, you know, have I become someone else, kind of thing?
That's really interesting. Yeah.
And so then you have the sad part where Drew is like, you know, this has been happening for a month or whatever. I really should have realized there wasn't another woman in the house.
Well, because they go like, is she suffering from sleep deprivation? He's like, no, she's doing better than ever, right?
Yeah, she's doing better than ever.
And that's what we've seen her doing better than ever.
The house is clean, cupcakes.
Yeah. It's like she just decided to do everything that she thought she was meant to do, but she kind of, she had this delusion that she was, you know, having help. And you know, and again, it was like herself as a 20-year-old. And so they have all these different, you know, philosophical talks about, you know, what is important in their lives and, you know, why they think each of them is cool. I like how it wasn't like a disdain. It's like, you know, to be a full person, you have to remember who you were and where you've come and like what your ideals used to be and like evaluating those things, not like as an enemy, but as a complete person. And so it's a cool movie, right?
Yeah. So and it's interesting because like the genre in the end of the movie ends up being the genre from the beginning of the movie. It doesn't change.
Right.
Right. It's just about how freaking hard it is to raise kids, right?
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Let me ask, is Tully a hallucination? Is she a split personality, or is she a coping mechanism that Marlowe the entire time is aware that Tully's not real?
I think she believes in Tully.
Yeah. I think
I think she's had a break with reality. Yeah.
And I think it's great because now Marlowe can write a fascinating book on the subject. And
that's true. So the hang up I have with that is if she really had called for the night nanny, what happens when the real night nanny shows up and she never did.
Yeah, she never did. Yeah. I think the point is she never did. And her brother is so rich. Yeah. And her brother's so rich that he, you know, he didn't even notice, right?
Yeah, he was not being charged.
That he wasn't being charged?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think she never called and then Tully shows up and she's like, oh, my brother must have just sent him? Or does she just blank on the fact that she didn't call?
She makes up that she called.
She
tells her husband, oh, I called. And she convinces herself she did, right? But yeah, it's...
Yeah, she convinces herself. And Drew confirms it, right?
Yeah. So let's talk real quick about Drew, if you guys don't mind.
I like that guy.
Ron Livingston.
Yes.
Yeah. So like when the movie started, I'm like, oh, Drew's the guy who's going to leave as soon as this gets hard. And he doesn't, right? And he's got lots of flaws. So he's the father who thinks he's doing everything right. And he thinks he's a good father and husband until he realizes he's not, right? Because she doesn't complain. And it's not her fault that he doesn't notice these things, but she doesn't wake him up. She doesn't tell him to stop playing video games. By the way, like, I was a big video game player when I first was married, and then they started making me motion sick, and that's probably the best thing that's happened in my marriage.
Saved your marriage.
Yeah, not being able to play video games. So similar to is his name Mitch? No,
it's Drew.
Drew, that's right. Yeah. Similar to Drew, where he's kind of like slapped in the face with the realization that I have not been doing nearly enough. So like my teen daughter who has anorexia. So I sat in a hotel for 2 months while she was in residential treatment, and the Air Force, by the way, paid for the whole thing, and it was really great. And they let me not work for 2 straight months so I could just be for my daughter. Great. So yeah, thank you, Air Force. But the point is there were lots of recommended books that I filled my time with, and one of them was called Father Hunger, and it was like one of the biggest problems with eating disorders is the father-daughter relationship. And I thought, I'm a great father. My daughter and I get along really well. And then there was like a chapter in there that included like a quiz and stuff. And it was like, okay, do you know these things about your child? And that's when I realized, oh, I'm not nearly doing what I thought I was doing. I'm not nearly as good of a parent as I thought I was. And I haven't been nearly as good of a husband as I thought that I was. And it's really hard. And some people, when you're faced with that, you can deny it, or you can get angry about it, or you can, you know, change, right? And so hopefully that's the path I've taken. But I feel so much empathy for Drew, and I think he's got a lot of growth ahead of him. And this movie's about Drew.
To be fair to him, he does seem at the end like he's trying, right?
Yeah.
There's the lovely scene when when she's chopping vegetables and he comes and puts in the AirPods, right? To listen to the same thing as her. Because that is, I was definitely struck by, you know, we're at a point where we have two-year-old twins and a four-year-old, and then I have two older kids. So yeah, like most of our lives right now is parenting. And and we both love art. We both care about art. And this is the first movie we watched together in a very long time. Actually, it was this movie, and our kids let us watch it. And it struck me, right? Because it's like we get to these you know, again, not through no bad, for no malicious reason, and with both of us trying our best, but we're not paying, you know, where I'm not paying attention to what she's watching, she's not paying attention to what I'm, you know, like we're not hanging out in that way, and you lose a lot that way, right? And I think that Ron realizes that, and Drew realizes that.
And so I think
it's not too late, although it sure could have been since she, you know,
almost died. She was saved by Myrtle. there's so much wetness and moisture in this film, but I think Drew's got a good future ahead of him. I think their marriage is going to get a lot better. So, but then there's the other people in this movie who keep interacting with her that I just want to kill, right? And they all think they're well-intentioned. And, like, the lady at the coffee shop is like, you know that there's trace elements of caffeine in decaf coffee. And then when she orders it anyway, she's like, gives her that look like you're a child murderer, right? But I don't know. I think my wife has had this experience far more than I do, because I think people feel very comfortable judging other mothers more than they do feel comfortable judging fathers, right? But my wife has dealt with that a lot, right?
Wow.
And I hate it. It just, and I think that is it her name, Lori? Who's the lady who runs St. Vitus or Victus?
Lori, I hated her, man.
Yeah. Oh, Lori's the worst.
When she told her off, I was so happy, and then she apologized. I was like, "Don't apologize, you were right."
Well, it is really crazy that, what kind of really high end school doesn't? I mean, I thought that was the point of sending someone to a school like that.
No, so, I mean, one of the problems is that they can pick their own classes, right? They pick their own. One of the ways that you stay so good is you push out the people who can't.
I guess that makes sense, because everyone has to try so hard to impress people to get in.
So it's weird, because we all three of us went to Timview High School, and I learned later that it was really important for Timview to have a high application to acceptance rate to BYU, to the point where counselors were telling people who they thought didn't have a good chance of getting in to not apply.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Please don't apply.
Does it go both ways? Does it behoove BYU? Because does that explain how I got into BYU, even though I was underqualified?
I was way underqualified. By the way, I'm 95% certain that Bill Fillmore pulled a fast one to get me and several of my brothers into BYU. But I don't know. So, but it's interesting because my son, my oldest son, who has Asperger's, which isn't a form of autism, right? Like, we went through all this, and the resources we were given through public schools were excellent. Like, every school knew how to deal with him. And I guess maybe part of that is because autism is a known commodity, right? But he had aides that were helping him in class all the way through probably his freshman year of high school. And so I was just kind of shocked to see this place that someone's paying thousands of dollars for these kids to go just had no resources whatsoever. And I guess you guys are right, that their reputation as producing high-achieving children maybe is most important. But it was crazy. So my experiences with the school systems being able to support children with special needs has been positive. And that may not be the case for everyone. I'm sure it's not.
This is great. I'm glad it's happened. I think a lot of it in America, unfortunately, is a crapshoot, right? Yeah. And some of it has to do with wealth. Some of it doesn't, right? Like, I mean, my daughter is at a private Catholic school right now, but before that, she was at a public school. But like the high end, quote unquote, the school in the area that, even though it's public, has racism gerrymandered its borders to be a private school, essentially. Huh. My kids do great on tests, but they like that part about them. But especially my daughter she's on her own path, let's say, and she never fit in there, That's why she actually fits in better at the private Catholic school. But a lot of it is because of this stuff on the ways that the school, it's so important to them who gets into which Ivy League schools and such, that they really, even though they're public school, it's supposed to serve everybody, they find ways to encourage some people to go elsewhere. Right. And it's despicable. So I'm definitely sad. I feel like I've sat in meetings like the one in that movie, and I'm sure you have too, Roy, which is, what fueled my anger towards that person so much, because it's out there and it's real. Yeah. No, this movie, unlike the other two we watched, was very realistic, painfully realistic, I think, which is one of the things that made it good.
I don't know. It wasn't as realistic as RoboCop to me.
Because, you have done a lot of robot programming, so that's
fair. I wonder, John, if like watching a movie like Tully, you're like, oh my goodness, it's possible I've avoided all of this, right?
it's weird how often it's funny, all the joyous things about having children, having kids is so great, and all the gleaming things and all the imagery of that. I've always kind of just sort of not believed, but like a movie like Tully, I watch and I'm like, okay, this is truer to me. And I think that might be a flaw in my system, that that like somehow like the hard things about having children seems real, but the good things about having children seems like a lie to me, you know?
I will say they're both true.
They're both true. Yeah. So I will say, like,
way to cover watching, yourselves, gentlemen. Yeah.
All
right. Cool.
While watching this movie, all I could think about was I want to hold that baby so much.
Yeah,
it did look. It was a very holdable baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
How old is your youngest is how old, Roy?
Well, my youngest is she 13 or 12? I think she's 12. But I mean, I got a grandkid now.
Oh, that's right. So there you go. So you've
Every now and then I get to go visit and hold that little baby, and it's wonderful.
That's nice. Yeah, holding babies is great, as long as you don't have to do it 24/7.
As long as you're not drowning at the time. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's weird because different kids are different, right? Like, some are kind of prickly and some are super snuggly. And but I had a couple kids because we all grew up in the LDS church.
Which ones were the prickly ones?
Joe was prickly. Miriam was prickly. John was average. And then Rachel was kind of prickly. But Sarah and James were super snuggle bunnies, right? Hmm. So, but like in the LDS church, right, you have this thing called nursery, and every parent can't wait to drop their kid off at nursery. But like for Sarah and James, like, oh, I could have kept them until they were 10, just snuggled them during church until they were 10, which probably wouldn't have been good for them socially, but whatever.
Yeah, it's probably would have some issues, so it's best you didn't. But yeah, but no, it's true. There's lots of wonderful things, and holding babies is great. And I love parenting and raising children, but it's really hard, and this movie captured that again. I think in a lot of ways, since it's about pregnancy and breastfeeding, which are not things that I've experienced, right? But even so, I think that there's this sort of underlying element that's really true to life in this movie. I think also the Legos and houses. Emily and I, you know, commented on that, how like so many movies, even where it's like, oh, they're this stressed family, this stressed middle class family, and their house is always immaculate.
Yeah.
And we're like, how come our house is never like that? So it's nice to see our house actually represented for once, right?
Yeah, it was always weird going over to people's houses where they had kids and the house looked really clean. And I'm like, okay, I choose to believe that 30 minutes ago your house looked like the house I just left.
Yes.
So anyway, I think one of the hardest things about parenting, especially as far as being as a mother, right, is because you see so much perfection around you because people don't show their flaws and you think that everyone has smooth sailing. And so there's just so much opportunity as a mother, as a parent, but especially as a mother to just constantly feel like you're failing every single day. And I don't know, it's rough stuff. Yeah. But also babies they're wonderful and squishy and they usually smell good.
They don't.
Adding to the list of people who just don't understand motherhood, you know?
Yeah.
I was wondering if you guys felt the same way about her daughter, Sarah, who just unceremoniously just said, "Mom, what's wrong with your body?" Like people like that.
I love their daughter. Did you know her name's Sarah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding is Charlize just went out and gained 40 pounds. And that was how she got her just had a baby bod.
Oh, really? It wasn't makeup?
It was not makeup.
Not makeup. She just like went on the Twinkie donut for a couple months.
No, I just read this last night. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. Let me try to get back there. Gosh, the stupid IMDb is like hard. Oh, there's the trivia. Oh, I missed the link. Okay, hang on. Just going there because it's the first link in trivia, and it sounded so great, you guys.
Oh, I see it. She gained 50 pounds for the role. An excessive diet of junk food, processed foods, In-N-Out burgers and milkshakes. That sounds like heaven.
Right.
She would eat macaroni and cheese at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So she gained 50 pounds for the role. And it's like, that sounds really great. But then it says it took a year and a half for her to shed the weight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it takes so much longer to lose weight than it does to gain it. You can gain 20 pounds in a month if you're really working hard at it.
But so now I know, what does it take for the most beautiful woman in the world to look like the rest of us? Right. Yeah. Yeah, and we know.
Oh, man. Right. So I, one other thing. It's funny because like the first thing I thought about this movie was like, oh, Charlize Theron's character's not Tully. I thought she was Tully. And then at the end, wow. Anyway.
Now, you guys saw – now, to the person who does play Tully, I don't know if you guys saw Station 11.
Okay. Have you seen that? Don't I have two episodes left. I really love Station 11. Okay. It's just taken
I'm not going to say anything about it, but I'm just going to say, like, I had never seen her before that, but based on these two performances, I think that, she's an up-and-comer, because she does amazing roles in both of them, I thought.
Yeah, she's...
She's one of the main characters in Station 11, if not the main character.
Yeah, she's like, the main character, yeah. Way up there. Did you ever see San Junipero?
Mirror? She was in San Junipero. So I knew she was in Black Mirror.
She's the young. I did not catch that.
Yeah. She's the
with glasses because she's got glasses.
So she's the weird glasses girl. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Yeah. No, I like that one too. So yeah. There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that's Tully. Do you guys want to get to next steps?
Yeah. Yes. We ready for a commercial break and then awards.
All right. Our commercial break is for us. Yours, Mine, and Theirs. We're a podcast. We're on audio files. So you can go to yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com. That is our blog address. That is where you can download all of these episodes individually, going way back to when we talked about The Thing and True Grit and stuff like that. And go ahead and go to Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars there. It used to be, just on iTunes. But go ahead, give us 5 stars. Leave us a big, long, super review. And then go to Facebook. Facebook is actually the funnest because that way you can vote on the movies we watch and the genres of movies we watch. And you can, raise your hand and say you want to come on board. Amma decided to come on board and he was rewarded.
I'd never known them before then.
Yeah. We re-met through Facebook and through our Facebook group, we could say.
Really, this podcast page on Facebook is the only good thing still happening on Facebook.
Yeah, actually it is. That's not safe to say.
It's a very nice community. Yeah.
So go there. You can vote and decide on what movies and also watch Roy take notes, which is like one of the funnest things ever. We get to kind of get a gauge of what he's going to think about these movies. So that's really fun. There's one more thing I'm forgetting.
You can call us.
Yeah, you can call us. And my link to the number is coming up now because my computer is moving along. The number is 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. You remember it spells something out because it designed it to spell something, but I can't remember what that thing is. And I'm sorry it's such a hard number to remember because I have to look it up every time. I would think by now that I'd have the number memorized. Just listen to me right now. Just write this down right now. 801-896-4542. You can leave us a voicemail message and we'll play it even if it's a terrible political opinion. So that is... our email. That's what I forgot. Yours, Mine, Theirs, podcast@gmail.com. You probably could have figured that out based on our other links. So send us an email. We check our email periodically. And
I checked it this morning. Emails.
Yeah, Roy checked it this morning. A lot of ads in there. See if you can displace those ads. Let's talk awards.
Yeah.
Okay. Awards. Okay, Roy, best title.
Oh, it's RoboCop.
Oh, yeah, it's RoboCop. I agree. Ammon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's RoboCop.
No, it's RoboCop.
Great title for a movie. Which is weird, because when I was reading the reviews of it early on, they were, like, worried about the title. And I was like, no, that's a perfect title for a movie.
It worked because I think it got a lot of 10-year-olds in the theater. So,
it's probably about how old we were when it came out, right?
Yeah. Ammon, best poster?
Best poster, also RoboCop.
Also
beautifully designed, clear. Yeah.
A lot of blue and black in it.
Yeah. So pretty much, okay, should we just skip the awards and just give them all to RoboCop? Is that what we're
doing? I've got some other ones coming up.
Okay. Roy, best credits.
Well, it's RoboCop. As RoboCop shows up in the steel RoboCop font.
Do you guys ever listen to the Blank Check podcast?
No.
It's super fun. They did a RoboCop podcast, and one of the hosts of Blank Check, he's like, I can't wait to talk about RoboCop. This is my very favorite movie. Okay, I'm going to start summing up. Like all great movies, this movie starts with RoboCop all in caps. my credits are Amityville Horror because it has the weird orange house that slowly goes into black and white, and it's just like you see the house. So, Ammon, do you have Amityville?
I also have Amityville. I really love the opening credits. I love them being interspersed with just the dude blowing the hell out of his family.
Yes.
It's been very matter of fact. We're gonna just get this out of the way right away. Also, and like RoboCop, great font.
Yeah.
yeah, it is great font. Okay. Ammon, while you're talking, best technology.
ED-209.
I agree, ED-209.
It's just so good.
I think they finally broke, the barrier of law enforcement by just amounts of bullets in a machine. Like, that's why it's such a great technology. Because it doesn't stop firing.
But I do give honorable mention to phones in Amityville Horror, which never work because the devil can apparently make all phones go static. So that's
running my theme of Amityville mention. Horror. They never plug the phone in.
So
hello?
Hello? So I was at a watch party about 15 years ago for, is it The Craft? One of those movies about teenage girls who are witches at school.
Craft?
Maybe,
sounds like
maybe Craft. It was The Craft. Anyway, because we were watching it because our pagan neighbors had invited us over, and we always watch their babies, their kids, so they could have their pagan celebrations after after Christmas during winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they invited us over, and the husband was like trying to make a phone call to order a pizza or something. He's like, it's not working. And he like turned to his wife and he's like, Sarah, and she had this big smile because apparently she was using her devil powers to keep his phone.
Really? She didn't want pizza.
Yep, and then he was able, when she relented, he was able to order pizza. Maybe she was worried about pineapple or something.
I wouldn't have thought that Valerie would have handled devil children very well. Did that go okay?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I mean, we couldn't understand a word they said in their devil talk, but... We just fed them raw beef, so yeah.
Roy, did you see your technology?
Your tech?
Yeah,
I did not. Okay, so they had to screw this technology into his face, and it's his grid vision, which makes no sense. Like the grid got smaller as they were screwing it closer towards his face. So there you go.
Grid vision.
Grid vision.
Okay, Roy, best outfit.
Ah, sure. Let's see. You know, I should have been more creative here, but I'm just going to go with RoboCop. I don't know if you call that an outfit, but I love the RoboCop look.
I almost picked just the RoboCop.
Yeah.
Ammon?
Sexy waitress costume.
Yeah, that's what I picked.
Important plot point, and also just a great costume.
Yeah, it's great. It's a shade of brown you never see.
Yeah.
It's nice. Okay, Ammon, best name.
Best name, Marlo. I think Marlo is such a great name for – I love O names for women.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive, right?
Yeah. I was thinking, it's an O name for women. I probably would have picked it, but since I had such a hard time with that name,
Marlo.
I realize it's limitations. Yeah. Okay. Roy, name.
Yeah. Kiva Rosenberg, unemployed person.
Kiva Rosenberg. He's the guy who's like, it's just the law of the jungle, man.
Yeah. His name is listed on the TV screen while they're interviewing him as Kiva Rosenberg, unemployed person. And then when you look in the credits of IMDb, it is also Kiva Rosenberg, unemployed person.
Okay. Honorable mentions to the rich people's babysitter in Tully named Shasta.
Oh, yeah,
that was it's like named after the soda, which is cool. And then
TJ Laser is pretty good too.
TJ Laser is pretty good. That's pretty good. But I also like the show that Sarah watches in Tully called, I think the show is called Draculaura.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Monster High.
Oh. Monster High. Draculaura is in Monster High. So that's kind of it's in Monster High, not Tully so much.
I mean they also had in that one Blaze the aging gigolo.
Who aged out? Yeah, he aged out. That's pretty good. Okay, but my winner is Clarence Boddicker.
Mm.
That was in my running too.
Which, Roy, I can't believe that's the name you had a hard time with, because that's a great name.
Yeah.
Okay. Ammon, best food.
Best food, the roast chicken that Marlo makes when she's on what we now later learn is her manic episode. Looks simple, delicious, and classical.
Oh, right. It has the lemon stuffed in it.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. That's butthole. Good. Excellent. Excellent. It's cloaca. okay, Roy. Food.
Honorable mention to cocaine. Then I went with Tully cupcakes.
Oh, those cupcakes. Yeah, they just looked
even though right. They were minion cupcakes.
Yeah.
that was what got me off of them was the minions, but it did look good.
Even though they were 6 cupcakes for a 20 kid class. Okay, my honorable mention is Robo paste.
Baby food.
Yeah. The winner is at the you know, adult party, the kids had truffle mac and cheese, I believe.
Oh yeah. Oh, they're okay. They're eating their disgusting truffle mac and cheese, right? So, it's fascinating to me that they made a point of like the baby food for RoboCop, and I think that movie really missed an opportunity to just show him chowing down on baby food for a couple minutes.
He never ate the whole movie.
Yeah, he never ate.
It's kind of weird. He's like, oh, I got you some food, and he just shoots the food.
Yeah.
RoboCop is ungrateful. okay, best alien Ammon.
So, you would argue that there may be no aliens in this movie. I think the flies in Amityville Horror have to be aliens. Mm. There's no other explanation.
They're Satan flies. So
yeah.
I would almost vote for Father What's-His-Name in that same scene. Like, what was his strategy to just stand in the midst of flies doing nothing? Only an alien would do that.
Yeah, it's like the Terminator from the original Terminator when he's replacing he's doing eye surgery and the flies are flying or on his face and he's not shooing them away, right?
Yeah,
that's weird. No okay. Human.
Roy, who's yours?
Well, it's Slurry Man from RoboCop.
Okay, I thought about picking Slurry Man. That's a really good one.
That's a good robot.
He explodes. Okay, I went with the weird glowy blue creature outside the window. The Amityville pig.
Jody.
Flying pig. Flying pig?
Yeah. Yeah.
Voiced by John Mulaney.
it could have been voiced by Bruce McCulloch. Like,
that's true.
Hey, everybody, I'm the flying pig. Hey, hey, hey.
Cabbage head.
okay, best special effects, Roy.
Slurry Man. Looking at by the car.
Okay, Ammon.
Windows opening and shutting in Amityville Horror.
Ooh, clever. Okay, I changed mine at the last second. My honorable mention is Ed 209 stop motion animation. Always fun to watch.
Yeah.
But
is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. It was stop motion. Okay. It was pretty much just claymation dinosaur is what Ed 209 is.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. But the winner is now the baby in Tully. That I assume was produced in a special effects house to be the most huggable baby.
Oh.
All right. Ammon, best location?
Dystopic Detroit.
Mm.
Looked like a fun place, and he really nailed the mood of it.
Yeah.
Nice. Most of the exteriors were actually filmed in Dallas, but they got the, they got the Detroitness with all the Ford Tauruses everywhere and everything. I've never been to Detroit or Dallas, so I don't know how I don't know how either one works. Let's see. Okay, Roy, best location.
Well, also located somewhere in Detroit is the Executive Lounge, the world's greatest bathroom.
Yeah.
That's where Dick Jones like pulls up his pants, steps out of the stall and says, "I'm number 2 around here." Okay. My location is Brooklyn because there are free bikes there.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's free to steal them, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay, best song. Ammon.
So if it was a series of songs, it would be the medley that plays while Tully and Marlo are driving to Brooklyn.
Yes.
But the standalone song was actually the opening, Ride Into the Sun, Velvet Underground.
Oh, I did not know that was a Velvet Underground song. I thought it was some new hipster song. Dang it. Oh, okay. Ah, you shamed me. I should know. I should know Velvet Underground. I do not. Okay. Roy, best song?
Well, the best autoerotica song of all time, She Bop.
I picked She Bop as well.
Yeah. That was
of the
was
medley Ammon was speaking of, which was all Cyndi Lauper songs, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Roy, best guest?
The mayor from Amity visiting the haunted house in Amityville.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that
Amityville Jaws mayor.
Yes, the Jaws mayor, who's now a priest in Amityville.
Okay. That's a good guess. That's good. Okay, Ammon, do you have a guest?
Yeah, so over, I mean, like, I loved how many Twin Peaks people were in RoboCop, but the very best was Ray Wise, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, as I am, Leland Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
Genius lawyer, is a psychopathic henchman to Boddicker in this. He gets the shit kicked out of him by RoboCop.
Yeah.
And then tries to drop metal on RoboCop later.
Oh, yeah.
Is he the same guy who tried to kick RoboCop at the club?
In the crotch?
Yes.
Robo crotch?
That's why we have complete body prosthesis. Yeah. Okay. My guest is Entertainment Tonight reporter Lisa Gibbons is one of the anchor people in RoboCop. I don't think we've talked about it, but I just thought one of my favorite parts of RoboCop is just the cheery news article.
Oh, it's great.
The news delivery. One of the news things was that the Star Wars defense satellite went haywire and destroyed like Malibu or something where two ex-US presidents resided.
Isn't that also, they've got the scene of all the presidents in space, too.
Which where the gravity went out for a while.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, I didn't write that down. I knew there was something at the beginning of the movie that, yeah, where the presidents were floating wrong. Okay. Let's see. Okay, Roy, best external recurring character.
So honorable mention to Basil Poledouris, who did the soundtrack for RoboCop, as well as Conan and The Hunt for October.
Wow.
But I'm going to go with Rod. Is it Steiger or Steiger?
I think it's Steiger.
Not sure.
So if you're going by the, if it's a German name, then it's Steiger because it's IE. But I don't, anyway, whatever. We watched him in The Heat of the Night, in which he was excellent. And he was also, of course, in The Amityville Horror.
Okay. Ammon, external recurring character from another movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have you guys' encyclopedic knowledge as well as you had, but Marlowe and Imperato Furiosa.
Sure.
Very different roles.
Oh, very good.
She nails both of them. Yeah.
And about at the same time, right? Like,
I feel like, what, Mad Max is 2015?
I guess, right? I guess it's 3 years difference. Gosh, it seems that's more than I thought.
She's in a very different shape in both of them. But...
Hmm. Okay.
But equally sort of important, like equally important sort of as feminist messages, right? So
interesting. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So recurring feminism, one more militant than the other, I guess, you know, because Marlo yells at that lady. I could be wrong here. I'm just checking to make sure because I didn't make sure, but I'm pretty sure James Tolkien is one of the cops, and he plays Strickland, of course, in Back to the Future. And so we're sitting there watching Amityville Horror, and of course we say the line, oh my gosh, did that guy ever have hair? Yes. Oh, he's the coroner. He's the coroner in Amityville Horror. He's Strickland from Back to the Future. Okay, Roy Best. Okay, internal recurring character.
It's like coming back from the dead, so possibly... the house has some dead people haunting it, and then RoboCop. You know, he got shot right in the head.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy to me that... Yeah. So, anyway, he was given a new life as a robot cop.
Right.
And then, of course...
And he's resurrected, he's the Christ figure, and he cleans house.
Yeah, and then I'm going to go ahead and say that for a brief moment... Well, we can do this two ways. So you could say that Marlo almost died in the car crash and was rescued, but you could also say that Tully died as she now has gone away, right? Tully's gone.
Yeah. Okay, very nice. Okay. Ammon, do you have an internal read? Oh, you already said kids, yeah. Which I thought was very insightful. Do you have another one?
So I have a couple. So the kids was one. Shooting at zombies happens in both Tully and RoboCop. Oh. But my best internal returning character is the bold and stark font used in both RoboCop and Amityville Horror. Both have just really clean, crisp, beautiful fonts for the writing.
Refonting. Very good. Okay, yeah. Well, I just went with Stephen Hunter Flick, who did audio for both RoboCop and Amityville Horror. So good job, Stephen nice. Hunter Flick. All right, Ammon, best death. Are we all going to have
best
the same death?
Death.
A lot of death, though.
Bob Morton, the executive who gets destroyed.
Oh, okay, after, yeah. Oh,
he's celebrating the best day of his life.
And celebrating the best day of his life with a couple of hookers and his knees fall off and he can't get to the grenade in time. And what's up with Dick Jones, like, being such an idiot? Like, he says, he says to Boddicker, you know, why did you call out my name? He records everything, you idiot. And then Dick Jones says the exact same thing when he's like, I had to kill Bob because he made a mistake. And then that's the tape they play at the end. okay.
Oh, man.
Let's see. My best death. Okay. Roy, you say yours first.
Thank you. So when they were demonstrating Ed 209, they're like, Mr. Kinney, pick up that gun. This is going to be funny.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It's a solid death, yeah.
The director's cut, like, added, like, the second round of shooting, like, after he was on the table. Like, that was
the theater. He's dead.
He's, like, very, very dead. And then Ed 209 keeps shooting him.
Oh, they should have kept that in there. Also, it would have been I'm torn between, is it great to have the dead body on top of the table where everyone's staring at him, or would it have been great if he had been blown out the window?
I like the dead nice body on the table.
Yeah. I do love that. Like, I just love how when he realizes it's not stopping, right? Because we've all had that moment where, like, a computer's not going to do what you want it to do. It's going to kill him in this case.
It's like when, you know, you're at work and it's like, okay, the system requires a shutdown in this time, and it starts counting down. You're like, oh no! It feels a little bit like that, yeah. Except the computer murders you. Okay, my death is just Emil, who ran his van into the toxic waste, flew out of the van. The toxic waste pushes him out the back of the van, and when he's asking his friend for help, he gets shoved in the road and splattered by a car driven by his boss.
Oh, that's really good.
What a
that's
way to
probably
go.
The obvious
he was a yeah. jerk, though. Again, yeah. That's the fault of RoboCop, having the worst people in the world making you want. It's like, you know what we need? We need a RoboCop to murder all these people. We shouldn't want that in our movies, but yeah, we do. Okay, Roy, best villain.
It's Laurie, the principal of St. Vitus.
I saw it coming. It's yeah. Laurie. Okay, Ammon, do you agree? Is it Laurie?
I wanted to go there. I went with George Lutz because I hate him so much.
Is that the father in Amityville?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think because I think the whole point is he's the villain, right?
Right. No,
not
that
the house.
Sense.
He's just a dick.
Okay. Honorable mention for me to Sarah, the child who says, "Mom, what's wrong with your body?" Honorable mention to in RoboCop Directive 4. Put in so they can't erase any members of OCP. Mm. Honorable mention to Jonah, Marlowe's child, who just does nothing but kick her seat the whole time. But the winner, I'm going to have to say RoboCop is the villain. Who just shoots
That's
people.
Fair.
He just shoots people, yeah.
He's the hero and the villain.
Yeah,
he's not an anti-hero, he's both.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the ultra hero. Both sides. I don't know, something like that. Yep.
Nice.
Okay, that. Roy, best hero.
The best hero is Panes of Glass that gave their life to have many villains smash through them in RoboCop.
Okay, good. I have a similar hero. Ammon, do you have a hero?
I went serious on this one with Marlowe. She just does her best. She really does.
That's the actual winner. That's good.
I want to believe that actually 70% of all mothers hallucinate
a night nanny to help them get through.
Yeah, you gotta find your ways, and that's okay, right? Yeah. Like, it's only a problem when it becomes when you drive into the river. But you know, a lot of us get close, so yeah.
Well, I'm gonna. My honorable mention is Tully for helping Marlo, mm-hmm. going out of her way, leaving her carefree 20s life. But my actual hero are it's just a flight of stairs that took down Ed 209. All right, Ammon, best goof.
So IMDb claims this is a goof, but I actually don't think it's a goof, which is why I think it's the best goof.
Okay.
We've already touched on it some. It's the decaf calf coffee moment. There's a long note in IMDb.
Wow.
I'm not going to read the whole thing, but somebody basically explains that it's actually fine for pregnant women to drink decaf coffee. Uh-huh. And so that's the goof, right? But it's not a goof because the point is that busybody lady didn't know that.
Right.
Busybody ladies are everywhere. So that really is a feature of our world. She was wrong, but yeah, and it's not really a bad. And it's also PSA, leave pregnant women alone. Let them do their thing. Right?
Yeah. No, that's really good. Right. That's funny that's listed as a goof. That's one of the things that drive me crazy about IMDb goofs. I'm like, no, this is something someone said in a movie. Yeah. We can't assume everyone's right in the movies we see. Then we're in serious trouble. Okay. Okay, goof, Roy.
Okay, when RoboCop comes online, the lady kisses RoboCop and you see her lips touch the camera. Mm-hmm. And so either his mouth has a camera mm-hmm. or she kissed his eyeball. And so I think that neither is supposed to be the case. But yeah. that's my
goof. There was a mouth camera. His mouth was just slightly open.
there's a camera between his lips.
Yeah, he's just like, and then she kissed that open mouth. Okay, that's pretty good. Honorable mention to, hey, is it Ed 209 or ED 209? All these characters say different things, so that's a goof. Yeah. Okay, but actually, as we just discussed, what people say is not a goof. The real goof is in the RoboCop heads-up display. And it says Boddicker wanted for murder, M-U-R-D-R. They abbreviated murder. They left the E out. okay, Ammon, best LOL moment.
Anything involving the priest in Amityville Horror. His constant japes and pratfalls. Goes blind. It's his car accident.
I'll quickly say, my honorable mention is the two wacky priests in the car trying to drive as the hood flies up. we watch those driver's ed videos where it's like, what will happen when this happens? And then the hood flies up and the class is like, the hood flew up. Okay, Roy.
That has only happened to me like 6 times since I've been driving.
Okay, what do you have for LOL?
Me, okay, it's a quote, right? Where they're in the hospital visiting, and Mitch says, we have to go to Emma's talent show, and Marla says, what's her talent? And then Mitch's wife says, Pilates.
Yeah. how very 21st century. Okay, I went with, this is just kind of a general one. Kind of the biggest moment is the very, very beginning of RoboCop during the board meeting. When Kinney is gruesomely murdered by Ed 209, and everyone is just kind of surprised in the moment, but not one person is like, oh no, Kinney died. Like, no one has any remorse for any executive in the slightest. It's almost like, oh, this computer over here, like, died. And that carries through the whole movie. Like, Bob dies, and Dick dies, and everybody dies, and no one, all the executives are just not interested in mourning the human life in the slightest. And I think that's funny.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Okay, Ammon, D minor moment. What's the saddest of all keys?
When George gets back in the car at the end, when he goes to get the dog and then he makes it back. I was really rooting for Kathy to just drive off without him. So I was really sad that she didn't.
You know,
very nice.
Or for the dog to become a hound of hell.
Eat off his face or something. Yeah,
they almost got there. Yeah. Okay, Roy, sad.
I'm going to go with your son is just not the right fit for our school.
That's
That is pretty good. Okay, I went with the end when Drew realizes that that there was no night nanny at all and that she was doing everything herself, and he just didn't acknowledge it or realize, and he just like kind of just is mostly just the puppy look on his face where it was like, I didn't know. I'm so bad. I'm a terrible person. Yeah. Okay. Roy, best WTH. What's the weirdest moment?
It's got to be hands off in RoboCop when RoboCop's hand comes off.
Oh, yeah. Very surprising.
Yeah.
Okay. That surprised me, but did it surprise me fully? Ammon?
Mine is totally as Marlo. I completely did not see that coming. I thought there was some sort of twist, but I did not see that as the twist.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the winner, but up until that point, there's like 20 minutes of the movie where you're like, so wait, did Tully have sex with Drew? And they just don't talk about it? And they're all cool with it?
Yeah, I know. It's like, this makes zero sense.
Yeah.
Like, right? Even bring that up, because he goes, we can talk, can we talk about last night? And she goes, we don't have to. And then in that moment, I was like, okay, I guess that kind of works, right?
That kind of works. And he says, oh, it was awesome. Awesome how you set that other woman into the bedroom. And you're kind of thinking like, oh, gosh, what is wrong with you? But really, you know, think back about it. I guess what happened is Tully just squeezed into that waitress outfit and just talked dirty to him, and that's what happened. And so, yeah.
Like Marina Sirtis in that episode of Star Trek where she looks like she's wearing a sausage casing.
Yeah, the sausage casing episode. Yeah. She's floating. That was a good episode. It's a weird episode. She should have just asked the aliens what they wanted right from the beginning. She kept saying, can you hear me? What's wrong with her? All they needed was some hydrogen. Okay. Ammon, best scene.
Marlo telling off the school administrators. I've wanted to do that so many times myself. It was really, really lovely. And then she apologized. That was not a good scene.
But. Yeah.
Okay. I was just laughing at my scene. I was just thinking about it again. Okay, Roy, what's your scene?
So honorable mention too, there's a moment in Tully where like her kid is like kicking her seat again and she gets out of the car and it's just after she's had the confrontation with the or no I don't remember exactly where it fits in the movie, but you just see her in front of the car, the camera's looking through the windshield, and she's just outside screaming, and I think she says the word a couple times. And I'll be honest, like as an enraged father, because I'm not a very sweary kind of guy, but I've thought that word really loudly multiple times.
So, I don't know if I've ever heard you swear.
I'm an H and D word kind of guy when I get especially angry. And it rarely goes past that.
But those aren't swears.
Xander gets up.
I hear those aren't swears. Yeah.
Well, H and D aren't swears. Like you didn't even say the words. You just said
letters.
H and D.
Yeah. Isn't it weird?
Those are letters. Yeah.
This reminds me of the John Mulaney joke, right? Where you can say midgets, but you can't say the N word. And so obviously one is worse than the other.
The fact that, you can't tell me one word is the same as badness as one. For one thing, we're not saying one of the words. We're talking about it. Yeah. Okay. Where did I say? Okay.
You've not told us your best scene yet.
Oh, my best scene. Okay, we're on scene. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, it's definitely the...
No. That was only my honorable mention.
Oh, was it? Okay, go
ahead.
I apologize. The best scene is when Rod Steiger gets flies all over his face.
Oh, gosh.
5 solid minutes of fly face. It's like ants in pants from Dieter and the Sprockets, except it's fly face.
Yeah. That's good. That's good movie filler, that scene.
Yeah.
My scene is the boardroom demonstration at the beginning of RoboCop. It's such a great scene because it's like, I don't know, you know, have you guys been in rooms like this where... You know, you can see this on State of the Union addresses and stuff, where every sentence the old man says, like, Bob just starts clapping really loudly to get everybody to clap. And they do that, like, 5 times, like, oh, yeah. And the mood is so good until Ed 209 murders that guy. And that's a whole scene. Oh, gosh. I love that scene. And I love how no one cares that the guy's murdered. They're just surprised. They're, like, surprised by the loud noise.
I'm going to have to fill out some paperwork is what a lot of them are thinking.
Like right after the guy just gets destroyed, the old man says, Dick, I'm very disappointed. Okay, here we go. Actor, Ammon.
I want to say Miguel Ferrer, the cocaine executive.
Yeah.
And I love Miguel Ferrer. But I think Charlize Theron was actually the best actor.
Yeah, I agree. She was really good. I didn't realize until seeing it a second time. I was like, gosh, she's doing a lot of stuff here. So she's really good.
She makes it work.
Yeah. Okay, Roy.
That's probably the correct answer. But I'm going with Rod Steiger.
For his fly acting. His priest driving. His yelling at another priest.
That's right.
It's the devil, I tell you!
So, but he's like one of those actors that's like Donald Pleasance, right? Like, because Donald Pleasance is in several iconic films, but Donald Pleasance is in 100 really bad films. But does Donald Pleasance ever phone it in? You better believe he doesn't. So I feel kind of the same. Like, Rod Steiger, was he nominated for an award in Heat of the Night?
I think he was nominated.
I don't know. Yeah, he should have been.
We talked about it. I'm pretty sure I remember saying
that. I just feel like this is a crummy, low-budget 70s horror film, but I feel like he still, like, put his heart into it. And he Rod Steigered it up to level, like, 11. So, anyway.
Okay. Let's quickly segue into unanswered questions. Roy, do you have any questions?
Oddly, I have none.
None questions. Yeah. They were all answered when Tully was revealed, right?
Yeah, no, I have no unanswered questions, so go ahead.
All right. Ammon, do you have any questions?
Yeah, okay. So, Theology of Amityville Horror.
Okay.
So, the movie seems to be rather Catholic, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you know, what's her name, Margot Kidder's character, Kathy, is pretty explicitly Catholic, as a Catholic priest, etc. In Catholic theology, God is more powerful than the devil. But in this movie, like, the devil consistently wins, and not just in the house. Like, the priest is at the church, and, like, the statue falls on him. And, like, he goes blind when he calls on the phone. Like, is the theology of Amityville Horror that, like, it's basically Christianity, except for that actually the devil's more powerful?
I don't know. It's interesting. And it's weird to me, because a lot of horror, and, like, 70s horror especially, it gets heavily into the Catholic Church. And maybe it's just easier to, okay, I can accept the premise of these things through the lens of Catholicism, because everyone knows Catholicism is, you know, a little supernaturally, right, and exorcisms are a thing. I don't know, and I also kind of like, because the story of Job in the Bible, right? Like, there's people who want to believe everything literally is true in the Bible, right? And I kind of feel the same way, that, like, God's supposed to be more powerful than Satan. Well, I also can't picture any circumstance whatsoever in which God and Satan are just like chumming around and like, hey, want to make a bet?
Yeah.
I'm down, right? So I don't know. It's weird.
They did it that time. You know.
That time?
Yeah, just it was kind of
an interesting party.
Yeah.
They were getting along. They were like, all right, we got like.
Well, I think I can explain. I think I can explain the Catholicism bit. Okay, this is just, you know, this is a theory. This may not have been how it actually happened. Also, this is a fictional story. So, I think it makes sense that the devil might have control over that branch of Catholicism, because Rod Steiger went to, like, his superiors were non-believing. I feel like the non-belief of his superiors kind of opened a channel for, like, the devil to have influence, because they didn't have, and so God wasn't there.
Also, Margot is a believer, and she seems semi-protected, but then her husband, not so much, right?
Yeah,
so,
okay, that's
because he doesn't really believe he's susceptible to the floating head.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do you have any, John?
Oh, Ammon, have you then, we ought to mention a few other movies. Have you seen Rosemary's Baby?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, have you seen The Omen?
No.
Oh, well, The Omen's another great, like, Catholic horror film.
But there, I feel like it's the credulity of this one, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's like in The Exorcist, the Exorcist wins ultimately.
Yeah. I don't know how much. Well, I guess this movie bills itself as a true story, so I guess it's trying to have credulity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, here are my questions. How do children sleep through several different gunshots in the house?
Yeah, because this murder was a real thing. He went bedroom to bedroom. And no silencer, right?
Right.
And I don't.
Yeah, this part really did happen. This part genuinely is true.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how you sleep through gunshots it seems like at least one of those kids would have freaked out and ran out of their bedroom or out of the house, right? But every single person that was murdered in that house was found in their bed.
Did he perhaps carbon monoxide them first?
That's what he did. He drove the car in into the upstairs and just left the motor running.
That's good. Okay. Okay. So the big question, what is the black cess in the basement that James Brolin keeps falling into? Because it's not blood.
That's not like, blood. Like when he falls through the stairs and it's like the beneath the stairs is just it's a cavity completely filled with whatever that liquid is.
It's black.
Yeah.
So it's molasses?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's delicious.
See, my theory is that they're sitting on a bunch of oil and they shouldn't have sold the house. Or this is one more thing, one more haunted element. It's actually Armus from Star Trek The Next Generation, the thing that kills Tasha Yar. The big tar monster. Yeah. So yeah, Armus. Okay. Right. And okay, here's another Amityville question that I think I just realized I have an answer for this. And I didn't realize it until just now, but the point of 3:15 in the afternoon.
Oh yeah.
Or not in the morning. 3:15 in the morning. Several things happen. That's when the murders happen. 3:15 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's when the murders happened.
That's when the murders happened. Okay. And so that's when the hauntings happened, because like in anniversary of the murders.
Right. But it's also like when the Salem witch used to get up or whatever. I don't know.
It's the Salem witch pee break. It's 3:15. Okay. And then my last question is, what's the significance of Tully having the dream where Jonah is in the back seat and then a new Jonah is in the front seat? So she has a quick dream where there are two Jonahs in the car.
So I think that's weird. I don't know the significance of him jumping into the front seat, but I would say that the dream means that like even while she's sleeping, she's not getting rest, right? Like those short moments of respite are not restful.
Okay.
He's invading her life. Yeah. She can't control him at all. And it's not going to end.
Okay. That sounds all right to me. That sounds all right to me. Okay. Ammon, do you have a titular line? When is the line of the movie said?
Oh, you know, I forgot to do that one.
Okay, we'll take one of ours.
But also, every time they said Tully.
Yeah. Yeah, that's mine. I'll just say mine. At the end, when Drew says, oh, I can't remember the exact line, but it's like, okay, Tully. Yeah, that's her maiden name, yeah. Tully. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, what do you have?
Yeah, it's sayonara, RoboCop. Which Boddicker says right before he gets killed. By the way, forensic evidence shows that most of the people were awake when they were shot and during the DeFeo murders. I guess they just scared, stayed in their beds, too afraid to leave their bedrooms.
Oh, wow. Nice look up.
Okay. You didn't tie him up or anything? Wow. Huh. That's messed up.
Okay, did everybody say... Okay, everyone said the titular line. Okay, let's go to quotes. Roy, best quote.
Sure, it's a free society, except there ain't nothing free, because there ain't no guarantees, you know. You're on your own. It's the law of the jungle. Ooh.
I guess not a good assortment of quotes this time.
That's from my favorite character, Kiva Rosenberg, unemployed person.
Nice. Okay, yeah, that's from him. Okay, Ammon, do you have a quote?
It's from our high school radio listening days. That's it, Buster. No more military aid. Pakistan is threatening our border. Nuke them. Get them before they get you.
That's perfect. Yeah, good. Okay, good radio DJ stuff. Okay, honorable mention to Tully saying to Marlo, I'm 26. All I have is time to think about stuff. And that takes me back, even though I'm pretty much the same person I was at 26. I feel a little bit more carefree about it, like back then. My quote is when Boddicker's gang are discussing like the logistics of their crime spree because they steal money to buy drugs to sell drugs for more money. And I think one of them says, why don't we just steal the drugs? And then the other one says, there's no better way to steal money than free enterprise, is what he says.
That's genius.
Yeah. Okay, tagline time. Roy, what's your favorite tagline that exists? And let's get replacement taglines. Sure.
Well, it's part man, part machine, all cop.
Yep.
But I'm going to go with, for the Amityville Horror, Mr. Plute mentioned it 5 or 6 times. RoboCop, no glass was harmed while filming this movie. And Tully, it's not a horror film.
Nice. Cool. Okay, Ammon, your tags.
So my best tagline is from Amityville Horror, "For God's sake, get out."
That's good. It's the whole poster. Yeah.
I really love it. My alternative tagline is, "Bad husband or haunted husband?" For RoboCop, I've got the friend is the corporations we made along the way. The real villain is the corporations we made along the way. And for Tully, I've got, no, it actually just ends up fine. Don't worry.
Good, good. You could have also used bad husband or haunted husband for Tully, I think.
For Tully.
That's true.
Okay. My tagline, okay, since you picked the RoboCop one, I'm gonna just do the other one. I'm gonna do the tagline for Tully. See how the mother half lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Clever wordplay there.
Yeah.
Okay, Amityville Horror. My new one is Amity, more like enmity. For RoboCop, I have Cyborg Lives Matter. And for Tully, I have The Night Nanny Cometh. Okay, let's see. Now, special awards. Okay, so this is weird. So this is what we went over. Okay, so, Ammon, your wife suggested Tully. Your daughter suggested Amityville Horror. And your brother suggested RoboCop. So now we decide the most appropriate suggestion based on those relations. Okay, this is weird.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Roy, why don't you start with most appropriate?
Well, I'm going to go with most appropriate is the Amityville Horror from the 17-year-old daughter. I think horror is a big deal for teens. So that's my most appropriate. It was tempting to put least appropriate as Tully from your wife because, I mean, unless your wife wants you to start having sex with diner waitresses. But my real least appropriate recommendation is RoboCop from your brother. I don't know your brother, but I choose to believe that he is the local leader of the Defund the Robo Police movement, and so it doesn't make sense for him to suggest this film to you.
That's fair.
Okay, I'm going to say Tully is the most appropriate, just because if nothing else, it will help you help out with the kids more than you do. I'm sure you help out a
watch
lot.
Watch this movie, Emma.
But it seems very appropriate that, I mean, you're not going to help out your kids less after watching Tully, of course. So.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the least appropriate is Amityville Horror from your young kid, because I don't think, I said this before, I don't think any 17-year-olds like any movie from before 1985. But
so I'm
making a blanket statement about kids, yeah. And obviously, you know, I was wrong on this one.
Yeah, that's okay.
So my mine are the same as John's. I do think, I mean, all of them, knowing all three of them, they all make perfect sense.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that it is weird to have a 17-year-old suggest a movie that is older than me. So.
By the way, did Enoch give like a one sentence description of why he wanted you to watch RoboCop?
So it's a twofer, right? So on the one hand, his politics are much like mine, and so he likes Verhoeven. He's also much more of a cinephile than I am. Uh-huh. But he also knows how much I hate gore, and so he thought it was funny to make me watch it.
Ah, perfect. That is very appropriate. I'm switching to RoboCop. Okay, let's talk, Ammon, while you're talking, let's talk most believable hallucination of these three.
So, Tully, I completely believed in her as a hallucination.
Oh, you mean to us as the audience?
Yeah, and also to her, because she's so sleep-deprived and just in such a dark place, right?
Well, I agree with Tully. I was doing it like, I mean, it's the most believable hallucination because it was believable to the audience. And so,
yeah.
So, okay. it's a bit both. Okay. Roy, what do you have? What's your answer?
I went with floating Ron DeFeo head because of Satan. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's pretty good. It's funny. It's actually, that wasn't James, Brolin's face. They actually got someone else with a beard.
Ron DeFeo?
Yeah, it was Ron DeFeo. It's like, okay, it was his release time, right?
For a minute, I was like, what is Abraham Lincoln doing in there underneath the stairs? But no, it was Ron DeFeo face, so yeah.
Nice.
You guys are probably right. Whatever.
No, we're not. Oh, do we have any other special awards? Because I always...
Yeah, the most Ammon character is... Ammon, you're going to love this. It's George Lutz.
Oh, that's harsh. I didn't know there was a most Ammon character award.
There is. John, who's the most Ammon character?
I think I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Ray Wise's character. You know, because I think he's like... He's a thug, but he's also kind of the high class of the thugs.
Yeah, he is. That one. Yeah. Well, okay, Ammon, so who do you think is the most Ammon character?
It's Murphy. It's not really Murphy. It's Drew.
Drew, very good. Fair. Well, okay, the most Ammon scene, I'm going with the cocaine party.
Okay.
Every weekend in my house, yeah.
I snorted off of my own boobs. I now have that ability. So,
I'm going to go with the dinner party at Marlo's brother's house, but just the kids party with Shasta. The weird babysitter.
Hanging with Shasta. No, I'm going to have to go with tangling with school administrators.
Yeah.
Enough of my life.
No. Okay, very good.
Or Legos on the floor at night.
Well, okay, now, so Ammon, you don't get to vote here, but we're doing the most Ammon movie. And, I mean, there's an obvious answer, but also there's RoboCop. So.
Okay, well, for this one, I'm going to say honorable mention to Tully. But the winner, I'm going to have to go with the Amityville Horror. Amityville Horror.
All right.
Okay, yeah, don't say anything, Ammon. Okay, let's rank.
Do you want some numbers real quick?
So, we always forget this.
Yeah, two of these are critically acclaimed films, and the Amityville Horror is not one of them.
Oh, okay.
So the average Rotten Tomato is 69%, but the Amityville Horror is a 30, so it drags it way down.
Wow.
RoboCop is at the top here with 91%.
Whoa.
87% for Tully. Money wise, Amityville Horror did very well. It cost $4.5 million and made 86. Huh. RoboCop cost 13 and made 53. Tully cost $13 million and it made a tidy 15.5. So a little bit of a profit there.
Wow, just a little tiny bit of a profit. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Ammon, you go ahead and go your third place winner.
So my third place winner is Amityville Horror. It was not a good movie.
What?
Oh, fair enough.
I understand why it's important, but that is my third place movie.
Is it important?
I don't understand why it's important.
All right, that's also fair.
Roy, you're seeing Amityville too?
Amityville Horror again.
Yeah, me too. Amityville Horror.
This would be a great movie to just have on at a party, right? Where you don't have to pay attention.
Yeah, you glance up and there's a floating pig. You glance up, there are two priests driving down the freeway.
Yeah.
You glance up and there's like someone falls into some tar.
Molasses tar, yeah.
It's like, okay. Okay, so now, I don't know, here comes the interesting part. I kind of think I know where things are going, but...
I've got a pretty good guess, too.
Yeah, let's see. Let's wrap back around. Roy, your second favorite.
Oh, you don't get to do your second favorite? We're not boomeranging?
Yeah, no, we can. I can't keep track of it. I'll just say it really quick. I'm going to say my second favorite is Tully, not because it's a better movie than RoboCop. It's because RoboCop is RoboCop, and, well, we know who I am here. So
yeah, it was really hard for me to overcome how much I love RoboCop, but that's my number two.
I thought so.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Very
By the way, I had my awards all written out before Tully, watching Tully, and RoboCop was my number one, and I had Tully as number two.
Before you watched it.
Before I watched it, yeah.
That makes sense.
Makes sense. RoboCop is also my number two. And again, like I said I didn't like it, but I liked a lot of things about it, and I think it's actually a really good movie. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately not for me. I understand why it's a classic in the way that it is, and I get that it would be most people's number one, but it's not my number one.
In fact, for the voters on our Facebook page, 2-1 voted RoboCop over Tully.
I kind of feel like people who've seen Tully maybe would have voted for it. Because right now it's just like, okay, you know what? I'm voting for RoboCop because, you know, I mean, just because that's how I vote.
Yeah. And it's an awesome movie.
It's a straight party. It's a vote nostalgia. It's great. But I really came close to voting for Tully because, as we discussed and as I realized as we were talking, like, RoboCop might not be a good movie. It probably doesn't deserve that 91%.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, okay, so you have all these great ideas. But again, I think RoboCop fails at what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I just think it's goofy and nostalgic. So,
interestingly, our favorite sex therapist, Brooke, voted for Amityville Horror. So there must be some really good psychosexual reasons why it's a really great film.
I didn't know that was her job, but that makes a lot of sense. Because I think it's about what a bad husband George is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Future business?
Yeah. Okay. Time for future business. We don't have anyone on the Skype this time. Melissa's joining us two times from now. But next time, it's man or woman or RoboCop in the wilderness.
By the way, do you know why we refer to it as future business? I mean, I'm thinking that from the Addams Family movie from the 90s.
We are?
Nice.
That's where I've always thought of
it. I just thought it was because of your future business.
Yeah. Oh, now I didn't realize we took it from anything.
Where Gomez Adams is talking to his thieving accountant, we can't talk about that because that's future business.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the fans have voted overwhelmingly, which was shocking to me, for Jeremiah Johnson.
I did not know this movie.
Jeremiah Johnson with Robert Redford, I think, filmed a lot of it, actually filmed in Sundance, but who knows?
Okay. All right.
I'm probably lying about that. Anyway, 1970s, Robert Redford, Jeremiah Johnson. I could also be lying about 1970s.
Good.
But the point is, John, you got to give us a movie.
Okay, it's me first. Dang it. Okay, does Journey of Natty Gann count?
She's got a wolf the whole time, right?
So it doesn't count.
I don't know, because it's like she's got a companion, but I guess you could also argue in Castaway that the volleyball is his companion.
The idea is no other humans, right?
But you do have John Cusack in that film.
That's the hard thing about this. We have to watch the movie to decide if it qualifies, which is...
If you want to pick it, then we can go with it.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. I hate doing this. I know we agreed that we would never do this, but my other pick is Never Cry Wolf. Is that better?
Oh, that is perfect. Well, I mean, for what we're asking for, Never Cry Wolf. So, again, I think he befriends a wolf. So my point to that is, if you want to choose the Journey of Natty Gann, I think that the wolf in the Journey of Natty Gann is more of a companion, and Never Cry Wolf is much more of a solitary kind of movie, but you can do either. I don't care.
Well, I mean, we can't pick. Okay, I did not know animals counted because Grizzly Man, it's all about him dealing with grizzlies.
Okay, no, you're fine. So either of those movies, John, you can choose either movie.
Okay, let's do Natty Gann. Let's do Natty Gann.
All right, I think we all know what I'm going to do.
The Journey of Natty Gann 2, Natty Returns.
No, it's Grizzly Man. We're gonna watch Werner Herzog.
Oh, good pick. Thank you.
Discover somebody eating a bear, getting eaten by bears.
I've never seen Grizzly Man. I've heard it's
good. I've never seen Grizzly Man.
Nor have I. I'm excited to.
Okay.
So, have you guys seen The Revenant?
I have seen The Revenant.
I haven't seen it. I was kind of itching to watch that.
It's really good, but it's, I don't know, it's just new. I don't know.
It is new.
It's pretty good. I don't know if the conversation would be that fun about The Revenant, even though it's pretty good. But
yeah,
that's fine.
Is that a horror film?
It sounds like a horror film, but I wouldn't call it that.
Sorry. I got to wrap up, guys. I
think okay. Let's see. Yeah. Well, we can do this real quickly because I do need a category from you, Ammon.
Yeah, say that.
Oh shoot, I didn't think of one. Crap. I forgot that was part of my job.
Oh boy.
Give me just a second, I'll think about it. Let me brainstorm here, guys.
Okay.
We can cut me out saying crap.
No, we're keeping that for sure.
Yeah, don't worry, you said far worse words.
John, give us your category and Emin, if you want to go to our spreadsheet, you can, because there's a ton of unused ones there, or if you just want to come up with something off the fly, that's fun too.
I'm coming up with one on the fly, yeah.
Okay. All right, okay. Go, John. You're first anyway.
Mine is Start Making Sense, which the category is non-talking heads documentary. So documentaries mostly of footage and, yeah, just of not interviews so much, which is so kind of hard to
Will that
define.
Be easy to know which are which before you watch them?
I bet there's a list somewhere.
Okay. All right. What number is that so I can just reference?
Oh, it is 59?
59, great. By the way, the random one is Primary Colors. So we're going to watch a movie with yellow in the title, one with red in the title, one with blue in the title.
Excellent.
Nice. So wait, I'm allowed to do a category that you don't presently have, right?
You can make one up.
Okay, here it is. It's, boy, is this gas expensive. movies about economic anxiety.
Wow.
Or movies where economic anxiety plays a major role.
Okay. We might require you to provide a starter list.
Oh, I'd be happy to. But I bet you, once you think about it, you can come up with them. You guys have not done Trading Places yet, right?
We have done Trading Places.
Oh, you have done Trading Places. All right. Well, we can think of some other ones. But yeah, that's my it's economic anxieties. But I'll help you come up with a starter list.
Okay.
Sounds good. Well, Emin, since you got to go, John, I'm sorry. I'm taking over. You're in charge.
No, that's fine. Emin, hang up. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. I think we're good.
Thank you so much, Emin. You're great.
Yeah.
You're so great, Emin.
Love you.
Love you.
I love you more.
All right. I don't. I think my words to you, they were kind of in the heat of the moment. I don't care for you as much as I said just now. But he's off the call.
I appreciate you walking that back for clarity. Okay. So anyway, for those of you who are still listening, I don't know why you are. We're done. But this was fun, and I have a blast with Emin. I think when the first time we did one of these with Emin, I was pretty nervous. But we have a blast with Emin.
Right, nervous back to the days when we would say something and then he'd respond and then we'd feel ashamed because like, oh gosh, he knows more about this than I do. And I feel, yeah,
something along those lines.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you listened and you enjoyed this and this is your first time, there are 90 more of these that you can listen to. So
Check
us out. Especially, we had a really wonderful live event recently. That you should give a listen to.
Yeah. Sign up for our live event that happened 3 weeks ago. We'll do another one maybe next year or something because that was a lot of fun. We'll totally do it again. But in the meantime, we've already set our business. Find us at, yours, mine, theirs, blogspot. Yours, mine, theirs, podcast.blogspot.com. Email us at yours, mine, theirs. podcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. Go to iTunes. We already said all that. Otherwise, now we just say goodbye, and it's always just so hard to say goodbye. I'm stalling. Yeah. That's what I'm doing. I'm stalling.
See you in the funny pages. Oh, John also said moratorium on spoilers for Tully until we get there.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally fair.
Yeah,
totally fair.
Oh, you're going to have to edit that out now, John. Or
what? This? This?
Yeah,
are we live?
Record this. Is this? I'm recording, but I
are
guess.
Are we on the air right now? Did I?
No, not until you start.
Are we broadcasting now?
Oh, yeah. No, we are. Okay. We are.
Hello, everyone. Just hang on. We're getting some things situated. Hang on, everybody. I can't believe you're making me put this in.
No, don't put this in.
Aren't most parents...
I got to pause. I think I muted John, and I don't understand how or why or how to unmute him. That's my haunting for the day.
Am I muted?
I got a little quiet there. I was like, huh. Okay, let's see.
Wait, can you guys hear me?
We can now.
So any of us can mute any one of us?
I don't know. It's just that you muted John Madsen, and I was like, I did not mean to do that. I didn't touch my mouse, apparently.
That's a very democratic
rule, right? Yeah, no, there's – okay. Yeah, sorry. Really quick, that reminds me. Like one time Roy and I were doing our Star Trek podcast, and we decided to do Google Hangouts, and anybody who wants can hang out with us, And we started doing the podcast, and some – a couple of trolls joined and they kept muting us and there was nothing we could do about it.
Didn't it feel like kids from junior high on their little motorbikes were doing circles around us while we were being terrified?
Oh, yes. It felt just like that. Like, we're like, we just want to have a good Leftorium podcast is what we were. Okay. So anyway, Tully has the baby and it's a cute baby. Margo has the baby.
Oh my gosh, John.
Marto has a baby.
No, you ruined the... Okay.
Be cool.
No, you didn't ruin the ending. You're fine. You're fine. Keep going.
I'll edit that out. I didn't realize... Okay. Did I say it?
Yeah.
Okay, don't worry. This is all out. Margo has a baby.